Just shy of 19,000 fans at the O2 in London tonight. AEW had for what was the highest wrestling audience ever in that building, beating out Money in the Bank 2 years ago. That was for Forbidden Door. The show is called Forbidden Door. And honestly, of all the Forbidden Door shows they've done, I believe this is now the third one, right? Third or fourth one. This is the one that felt the least like Forbidden Door. And at one point, 3 years ago, it felt like a novelty because we had all of these talents coming in from other promotions, mainly New Japan, but now it's CMLL and it's Stardom and it's this revolving door of talent. And it was a very novel concept for a major promotion here in this country to be bringing in talent in that way and featuring them from other promotions. And so it was kind of a cool concept, and you can get some matches that you otherwise would never be able to see. And the thing is, AEW now, on a weekly basis, basically opens the forbidden door. The forbidden door never closes. And when that happens, it's no longer forbidden. So the show loses a little something special because of that. Now, they put 19,000 people in the building tonight. They did, you know, I'm sure, a huge gate. They made a lot of money off of it. Tony Khan is not going to stop doing it, but probably doesn't need to be forbidden door anymore since we get it on a regular basis here. This show tonight was, when this show was over, it was a good show. It was a good show because we had a lot of really good wrestling on this show. That's your thing. You got tons of matches on the show tonight. Even the pre-show had four matches, and they tried to stuff as many people in there as they possibly could. There was some very good wrestling on the show tonight, some solid wrestling. This was not a show that when it was over, I came away from it thinking, you know what, that was a great show. This was one of the best AEW shows of the year. It wasn't. We had a main event tonight of 10 men, lights out steel cage match. That was technically the main event. And we had the AEW World Championship on the line as well, Hangman Adam Page and MJF. What we had in this main event, it was Will Ospreay and his team with Darby Allin and Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, who we have not seen since All in Texas. They have not made a single appearance all together. All of Ospreay's friends taking on Jon Moxley and Claudio and Gabe Kidd from New Japan and the Young Bucks. And this was Ospreay's last match before he goes away for a while. And the big story coming into this match had to do with Will Ospreay's health. He's been giving interviews all week long to CBS Sports and this outlet and that outlet, talking about his neck and talking about the discs that are compromised, as he says, in his neck. And he's going to be going under the knife. You know, he doesn't know when. He doesn't know, you know, what his future looks like. But that was really the story going into this match. And it's not just a storyline. It's legit. You know, he is hurt and we are not going to see him for a while. So coming into the show, it sounded kind of crazy that they were even allowing him to be in the ring. And as it turned out, he didn't even do the craziest stuff in that match. When it was over, even though he was left laying at the end of the show, he came out of it a hell of a lot better than most of the other people in that match, including Darby Allin. Darby Allin more than made up for whatever Will Ospreay couldn't do and said, "Don't worry, I got you covered." And Darby was doing Darby things in that main event. But the baby faces go over. Will Ospreay looks like he's going to get this grand send-off here in London, 30 minutes from where he lives. The last time we're going to see him for a while. And then we got to get heat. So they did a beatdown angle. Now, this cage that they had tonight, it encompassed almost the entire ringside area. It didn't encompass the announce desks. But it was more than just the ring. And it wasn't a very tall cage. But again, it gave them a little more breathing room to do some crazy shit. Ospreay is the only babyface who is left in this cage. He is attacked by the heels. The other babyfaces have been locked out. And this is the angle they did here at the end of the show. They're doing a beatdown angle on Will Ospreay. And I'm watching this and I'm seeing all these babyfaces on the outside powerless to do anything about it. They are powerless to come in and help this man, even though there was no roof on this cage. Even though Marina Shafir just climbed from the outside into the cage, the baby faces they're helpless. They're stuck on the outside. The door is locked. It's padlocked shut. There's nothing they can do except for Wheeler Yuta is there with a kendo stick in his hand, trying to fend off anybody who might attempt to climb into the cage. Of course, nobody did, by the way. Nobody did attempt to climb into the cage. And then eventually the ops, Samoa Joe and Powerhouse Hobbs and Katsuyori Shibata, they run out. And finally somebody says, "Oh, you know what? We can lift the cage." And so somebody in the production crew decided, hey, I could push a button here and the cage will go up. And then they came to the aid of Will Ospreay, but it was too late because he had a chair wrapped around his neck and it was stomped on. The same thing they did to Samoa Joe in Texas. The same thing they did to Will Ospreay, actually, in Texas. They did it to him again here. Although we saw Ospreay back on TV 2 weeks later. So by that logic, I don't know why we're supposed to care about them stomping on a chair when Will Ospreay was already back 2 weeks later the last time they did it. But it was a very goofy angle watching all the baby faces mill around outside as if they were powerless to do anything about what was going on. Not the only goofy thing on the show tonight. It was an angle, frankly, I didn't even think really needed to happen. They made the decision that they wanted to put heat on him because he's leaving anyway, and so we'll put some heat on the Death Riders, you know, to get something out of it. They would have been better off just allowing Ospreay to just have his send-off. Even have the heels win. Have the heels win and then have Ospreay stand up and get the nice send-off and go off the air that way. I just didn't think it was an angle that needed to happen in the first place. But that was very, very silly watching that. We had Hangman Page on this show defending the AEW World Championship against MJF, who still has his Casino Gauntlet contract because he originally said that, okay, you know what? I'm going to cash in my contract. That's how I'm going to get this title match. Then they changed their mind. And they probably realized, okay, this is really stupid, so let's not do that. And instead, we'll have him threaten to burn Mark Briscoe alive until Hangman gives him what he wants. So they were able to kind of back out of what they had gotten themselves into. So he had that as an insurance policy. His contract was not utilized tonight. And that made it a little more obvious. He was probably not going to win the championship tonight, and he didn't. Hangman Page is still the AEW World Champion. But MJF still has that contract. And by the way, Hangman and MJF, best match on the entire show. That was my favorite match of the night. Easily, out of everything on the entire show. And that is despite some of the goofiness that we had in that match and the overbooking in that match. MJF still has his contract. Athena does not. She did cash in her Casino Gauntlet contract for her match with Toni Storm. Toni Storm not only beat Athena, but got her to tap out. And Timeless Toni Storm is still the AEW Women's World Champion. Now, this contract stuff, I have said before, I am sick of the cash-ins. I'm sick of the Money in the Bank cash-ins. I wish they would do away with it for a while. They're not going to because it's still a very popular show. I get it. I understand it, but I'm sick of it. And I'm no less sick of it when AEW does the same thing and copies the exact same idea. And Tony Khan has gotten a lot of feedback from fans telling him the same thing. Why are you copying them? Why are you copying Money in the Bank? It's not a great concept to begin with because it's been beaten to death. Why are you doing the same thing where you can cash in anytime you want for a championship match? He addressed this in the post-show scrum after the pay-per-view. I just want to read to you from what Tony Khan had to say about this. He said, I want AEW to be different, and I've been listening to the feedback and the voice of the fans, and I think people want the championships in the sport of pro wrestling to have integrity. Of course, that's hard to do when you have 15 championships, but that's beside the point. I don't want to have a big ticket championship match that we are unable to advertise, and also I don't really want to necessarily utilize a stipulation here that is being utilized other places. That's why going forward, I want to set the tone that from now on, I think the right thing to do is all contract executions should be on at least a week's notice so that we can properly promote the matches, so that we can properly give the fans notice and have the integrity of a championship match. Now, I don't know if that applies to MJF's contract. I don't know if this is retroactive and it includes his contract or if this is just my impression was that it's going forward when they do future Casino Gauntlets. So that I didn't get any clarity on that. But that's the way to go. That's the way to go. At least try, if you're going to do it, differentiate it in some way instead of doing the, you know, sneaking in after the match is over and cashing. It's just so overplayed. So if he's going to utilize that as a stipulation, I like that. At least change it up. At least he recognizes, you know what, we don't need to do it exactly the way that they do it. That doesn't even make it a great idea to begin with. So we'll have a 1 week grace period so that we can at least promote this big championship, which I thought was what they were doing originally when they started doing this, unless I'm just misremembering. But that's the way to go. So that was the update on Tony Khan as far as future Casino Gauntlet contracts are concerned. Again, that's going forward. Wardlow is back. Remember him? I had almost forgotten about him. I forgot he even existed. Wardlow returned on the show tonight, and he has joined another faction. Now, you would think he would have learned his lesson having been a part of multiple factions in the past, and it usually doesn't end very well for him, but now he's part of another group, and we'll talk about what that group is. Jamie Hayter is back as well. They held out on her return here for the big UK show. People were very happy to see her. I was very happy to see her. She'll be a nice shot in the arm in a women's division that is loaded with a lot of talent, but they have been besieged by injuries. And not just in the women's division, but they have been besieged by injuries in that division as well, which is the reason why Tony Khan is held out on having AEW women's tag team titles. Those titles are made. They're ready to go. He has said this before. But a lot of people got hurt. Mina Shirakawa got hurt. Multiple people got hurt, including Jamie Hayter. But now as they start to get some of them back, we'll probably end up with more titles in AEW. The matches tonight on this show were solid to very good. They ranged from, you know, pretty much between those two measures. But when the show was over, I didn't feel this overwhelming sense of, man, this was a great show. You know, I've seen some great AEW pay-per-views. This will not rank as one of the best that they've done even this year. But I thought for the most part it was good. Again, the Forbidden Door aspect of the show, for me, it doesn't do anything for me anymore. It's played out. It's passé. We get Forbidden Door every week. I wouldn't mind if they just junked the show altogether. If they want to have a show where you bring in a few international talents to have, you know, two or three matches on the show, that's fine. That doesn't make a Forbidden Door. There's nothing forbidden about it. And Tony Khan should be very happy about the fact that he was the big promoter here in North America, at least on a national scale, who, you know, has television the way he does, who really kicked that door open in a major way, you know, and started having matches like this again on pay-per-view. That's great. But there's really nothing forbidden about it anymore. It's been years. So that aspect of it to me is just very played out. That bloom is off the rose as far as that goes. But very up and down on some of the stuff that happened here on the show. We'll go through the whole thing. This is your Forbidden Door review. 2025, I am the Solemn Monster. A little later than I wanted to go live. I have good reason for it, though. Take a look at this. I've been dealing with this all weekend. Look at my little wasp friends over here. Hello. There's the yellow jackets. Look at all the bodies. This has been an absolute nightmare. And I have been waiting for an exterminator to show up. Yeah, that guy was very angry with me. He's looking right at me. He was ready to sting my eyeballs out. But I got him first before he could get to me. So I will tell you, I'm still waiting on an exterminator to show up. And he might actually be here now. So I cannot guarantee that I may not have to duck out here for 5 minutes. I was holding out as long as I could. He was supposed to be here an hour ago. And like the cable guy, of course, never shows up on time. So do I have a hive? Obviously, I've got something hidden somewhere. They've opened the forbidden door and they have created a nest or a colony. I'm pretty sure the entry point is outside the house in the brick. And they have burrowed their way in and they have made their way up to the apartment upstairs. So, yeah, it's sting. I haven't been stung yet, but I'll tell you what, man. I would say from the time Forbidden Door started, the main card, to the time that show ended, it was 4.5 hours of this pay-per-view tonight. And that wasn't even the longest AEW show of the year. But I would say from the moment this show started to the moment it ended, I probably killed close to 100 of them. Today was the worst day of them all. It was bad on Thursday. It got worse Friday, yesterday, now today. It's like, it's a graveyard. You should see my little hand vac. It's like, it's an absolute graveyard. So, it's not been fun. But anyway, that's why we ended up going live late here. I'm just beside myself, but you don't have to worry about that because you're safe and sound wherever you are. Now, we had the 0 hour pre-show, had four matches. I'm going to run through this as quickly as I possibly can as far as the pre-show because whatever. We had Roderick Strong. This was Tony Khan trying to fit as many people as he possibly could here on this pre-show. So we had Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, Yuya Uemura from New Japan, and El Desperado They beat Leo Rush, Action Andretti, Josh Alexander, and Etch Cero. When the match was over, Lance Archer and Rocky Romero, they joined the heels in attacking the babyfaces. Tomohiro Ishii made his way out to the ring, and Ishii and Archer, they traded elbow strikes. Ishii got the better of the exchange. He hit a stalling, what Excalibur said was a brain buster. It was not. It was a stalling suplex. No less impressive that he was able to hold Archer up there for a good 5 seconds, but it was not a brain buster. Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. They beat Speedball Mike Bailey, Kevin Knight, and Michael Oku. Now, there was a lot of crazy shit that happened in the main event tonight with Ospreay and Darby and this blood and gore and all the shit that Moxley and AEW, you know, the sickos and the fans love. So we had a lot of really crazy shit and dangerous bumps in the main event. None of them was the craziest bump of the night, believe it or not. We saw people go through stacked tables and all kinds of craziness. The bump of the night, unintentionally, came in this match, where someone almost died. And it was Michael Oku. Now, Michael Oku, very talented, young star out of the UK, obviously being in the UK tonight. Everybody was very happy to see Michael Oku. And Toa Leona of the Gates of Agony at one point, he hit Oku with a pounce. I've seen some pounces in my day. I ain't seen no pounce like this. He pounced Michael Oku out over the... He cleared the top rope backwards. And he goes flying out of the ring, and he damn near lands right on top of his head because his body is rotating in midair. So it looks like he's about to come straight down on his fucking head. At the very last second, he altered his movement. It looked like he landed face first on the floor, which honestly isn't much better, but it's better than landing on top of your fucking head. Everybody in the audience gasped. The announcers gasped. I gasped. I'm like, is he alive? I mean, I was sitting here, I was scared to death initially because, again, it was scary. It was the scariest moment of the night, and it happened on the fucking pre-show. I don't know how he was able to continue and finish that match. I mean, he looked a little loopy at first, but otherwise, he was able to continue, and he went on, and my God, that's just absolute insanity. If you didn't see it, you can go back and check it out, but, I mean, whether it was the pre-show or the main card, that was scary all the same, and he's a very, very lucky man. The finish went over like a wet fart because the fans were not happy about Ricochet pinning Oku. Maybe out of this we'll get a singles match at some point between Ricochet and Michael Oku. Maybe that's what this is leading to. I don't know. But seriously, that bump was so dangerous and stupid, and he's just lucky to be in one piece. Tekla, Julia Hart, Sky Blue, and Megan Bain beat Willow Nightingale, Harley Cameron, Chris Statlander, and Queen Aminata. After Bain ducked a clothesline from Statlander, who then accidentally hit Willow, and that led into the finish with Bain pinning Harley Cameron. You know, at some point before the end of the year, perhaps this frenemy stuff with Statlander and Willow will actually pay off in some way. Maybe we'll actually get some forward movement in this story because it just feels like we've been stuck in neutral for months with this stuff. And closing out the pre-show, match number 4, the Ops, the Trios champions, Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, Katsuyori Shibata. They beat Clark Connors, Drilla Maloney, and Robbie X of the Bullet Club War Dogs from New Japan Pro Wrestling to retain the AEW Trios titles. So everybody got to be on the show. Now, we had already seen 30 wrestlers, 30 in action here on the show before we even got to the main card, which opened with Adam Copeland and Christian Cage in their first match tag teaming together in 14 years, taking on Killswitch and Kip Sabian. Killswitch, of course, the replacement for Nick Wayne, who broke his foot legitimately a couple of weeks ago. He got bounced out of this match. Killswitch, Luchasaurus, call him whatever you want to. He's been out all year. We haven't seen him since last summer, right? Last fall, last summer. He had a very serious health situation. We talked about this on the review on Wednesday night. It was very touch and go there for a while. Very, very serious stuff, potentially life-threatening. He made it through. Good to see him back. So he stepped in for Nick Wayne. Now, the fans did a sing-along here at the beginning. Copeland came out first. And the fans did a sing-along to Alter Bridge. Everybody in the building. I mean, this was as loud. We always hear them kind of pick up with the song when the song ends and they keep singing. This was as loud as any crowd has done it, I think, since Copeland debuted here in AEW. And loud enough that even Alter Bridge on Twitter reacted to what they saw here when they saw the clip. They were very impressed. So Cage was punching Sabian in the corner early on here, and he scurried over to tag in Killswitch. Christian refused to fight him. He tagged out right away to Copeland, who just looked over at him like, really, dude? Mother Wayne got in Copeland's face outside long enough for Killswitch to use Sabian as a projectile. He picked his own partner up at a powerbomb position and just threw him at Copeland. Killswitch was throwing corner shots until Sabian tagged himself in and the fans booed. I should mention that Bryan Danielson was on commentary for most of the matches here on this show. And he said that this was the same disrespect that Christian had shown Killswitch in the past. That's what Sabian was doing to him here. Later in the match, Sabian, who ended up bleeding from the eye, screamed at Killswitch to tag him. So Killswitch hit an overhand shot for a tag and then chucked him into the ring. Christian wanted a tag. Mother Wayne, though, pulled him off the apron. Copeland was able to fight off Killswitch and Sabian and tag out to Christian, who finally faced his fear. He started throwing shots at Killswitch, only to run into a headbutt. So there was a powerbomb out of the corner by Copeland and a top rope headbutt from Christian Cage. Killswitch, though, kicked out at one. Sabian made the blind tag as Copeland and Cage hit a double impaler DDT on Killswitch. Bryce Remsburg, though, couldn't make the count. Killswitch stood on the apron and grabbed Christian by the throat. Copeland speared Killswitch through the ropes to the floor. Cage ran into a knee from Sabian, who went for a Killswitch himself. Cage, though, shoved him into the ropes. Christian popped Sabian up while Copeland returned to the ring and speared him, and then Christian covered a bloody Kip Sabian to win it for his team. After the match was over, Christian offered Copeland a handshake, which he accepted. Copeland then went for a hug, and Christian let him hug him, but again, he didn't reciprocate. He seemed very uncomfortable about the entire situation. Solid opener. I looked at this as sort of an appetizer to the main course, which is coming, I assume, in Toronto when Copeland and Christian take on FTR. That has to be the direction, whether it's All Out or not, right? We know that they're headed for a match with FTR at some point. So they didn't really need to give too much away here. And they told the story, though, of Kip Sabian disrespecting the Dinosaur in the same way that Christian used to do. And if you think back to it, before he went away with his health issues, they seemed to be building to a split where he was not going to tolerate this shit anymore with Christian. And they were doing the same thing here with Killswitch and Kip Sabian. No signs of dissension between Copeland and Christian. A couple of funny spots in there, like when he immediately tagged out to Copeland because he didn't want to wrestle Killswitch. But outside of that, they work like a team that actually had wrestled a few matches together back in the day. I don't know how many matches they had. Maybe a couple. But they wrestled like they used to be tag team champions at some point. It's crazy. So we'll see if Christian learns to fully embrace his old self. I hope not. Copeland called him an asshole on Wednesday. He should remain an asshole. That's the version of Christian I want to see. We had Kyle Fletcher defending the TNT Championship against New Japan's Hiromu Takahashi. They had the lead announcer for New Japan, Walker Stewart. I was going to say they had Walker Stewart on commentary, who's very, very good at what he does. And again, very, very young, only 23 years old, and carries himself like a 10-year vet. So he tagged in on commentary here. He replaced Tony Schiavone on the call for this match. And Don Callis joined as well. Danielson said that he hoped Callis would have brought the oil painting with him of Fletcher and himself, but Callis said he's working on one of Danielson, his headstone. Got a little dark there. Fletcher hit a Liger bomb, showed frustration over not being able to get the pin. Hiromu started laughing in response to Fletcher hitting him with rolling elbows. Takahashi ran into a big boot. Fletcher covered him, but Takahashi kicked out at one. Kyle set up for a brainbuster on the apron, and Hiromu countered into a DDT. Back inside, Fletcher stuffed Takahashi's time bomb finish, and Kyle set up for something, but Takahashi countered with a destroyer for a nice near fall. Both men reversed tombstone pile driver attempts, and eventually Fletcher hit one for a two count. Fletcher wanted a brainbuster. Takahashi rolled through into a cradle. Fletcher held on, though, and rolled into a sheer drop brainbuster and picked up the win. It started slow, but it picked up big time in the second half. Some good near falls. I mean, the finish was never in doubt. And that was one of the issues with a lot of matches up and down this show, especially the championship matches. The outcomes were just never in doubt. Nobody believed that, you know, Kyle Fletcher, 23 days or 24 days into his run as TNT champion, was losing to Hiromu, you know, who popped up on TV once in the build to this show. Nobody believed Mercedes Moné was losing her championship and so on. So that was always working against this match, no matter how good it was, that drama. You just weren't going to be able to get that drama. But it was the expected good match that you would think these two would have, and it was a competitive win for Fletcher. Again, he's not even 30 days into his title run, so, you know, to get a competitive win like this and more like these will help him along the way. We had a four-way. I mentioned Mercedes. We had a four-way match for the TBS Championship with Mercedes 9 belts. Yes, she has 9 belts now as of Friday night. Mercedes Moné defending the TBS Championship against Alex Winza, representing AEW, Persephone, representing CMLL, and Bozilla, representing Stardom. Mercedes entered last. Of course, she got the elaborate entrance because she's the champion. She entered with 8 royal guards lining each side, 4 on each side, and it just so happens that she has 9 belts. One of them, being the TBS title, was around her waist. The other 8, each one was held by one of the royal guards. Again, 4 on this side, 4 on that side. Everybody has a champion. That's the way it is here. Everybody gets a championship. So that was the big elaborate entrance for her. At least she didn't have to carry them all. She's going to get to a point, you know, when she hits 10, and she will get 10 titles. I don't know what the 10th one is going to be. They'll just make one up. It's not like half these belts mean a fucking thing anyway. Most of them don't. But when she gets to 10, I do wonder what she's going to have like a wheelbarrow that she drags behind her. She's not the biggest person to begin with. So 10 championships, it's a bit of an issue here, because she travels everywhere with these belts. It's got to be a nightmare. I'm sure it's not as much of a nightmare as having, you know, hundreds of yellow jackets in your apartment, but it's probably pretty close. But she didn't have to worry about that tonight. So Bozilla, early in this match, pressed Mercedes over her head and tossed her onto Windsor and Persephone at ringside. Windsor and Persephone, they worked together at one point. Bryan Danielson mentioned on commentary that they had been tag team partners in the past, so they know each other. Danielson mentioned that, he mentioned something else, but it actually wasn't relevant. So there was a big Tower of Doom spot with Mercedes on top, which left all 4 women down. Moné put Windsor and Persephone in a double statement maker, which they eventually escaped. Bozilla returned. She clubbed Windsor, but Danielson said it reminded him of Vader. Actually, I could have sworn, you know, when Bozilla came out here, she had this mask on. And I mean, unless it was from the pyro at ringside, I mean, it looked like it was smoking. And I remember when Vader first debuted in WCW, his helmet would smoke. So I don't know if that was intentional, if she's borrowing some inspiration from Vader or not, but I had thought the same thing when she came out during her entrance. But that's how she was treated and booked in this match. She was the monster. You know, she was the monster of the match here. So then Bozilla put both Persephone and Windsor down and hit a moonsault from the middle rope onto them. Moné returned to the ring to break up the pin. Mercedes went for a poison rana and spiked Bozilla on her head. Bozilla was barking at Persephone a little bit later on, who was down on the floor, and Persephone got pissed, returned to the ring, and actually got Bozilla up and dropped her with a razor's edge. And Bozilla was by far the biggest, physically most imposing woman in the match. So that was kind of impressive, getting her up for the razor's edge like that. Windsor put Persephone in a submission hold that Mercedes broke up. Persephone hoisted Moné up for a razor's edge, but Moné rolled through into a pinning combination and got the pin. to retain the TBS championship, one of those flash pins that just comes out of nowhere. And she is still the TBS champion. It had its moments. There just wasn't much done coming into this match to, you know, generate any real interest in it, nor did anyone actually believe that Mercedes was going to lose her title. So it was just a matter of, like, who is she going to pin? You know, is it going to be Alex Windsor? Or is it going to be somebody from one of the other companies? It ended up being Persephone. But no matter how much they put over on commentary, the element of danger that she was in here, you know, how she didn't have to be pinned to lose her championship, and it's four women in this match, which means that's three other people who could very well take her title away from her. Oh my God, you know, her title has never been in this much jeopardy. It's like, no, I don't think that anybody honestly believes that, no matter how hard you try to communicate that. I know that's their job to try to do so, but it wasn't going to work. I will say this, though. For an audience that may not be familiar with Persephone or may not be familiar with Bozilla, I mean, she's 21 years old. She's only been wrestling for 3 years. She's only been in Stardom for 2 months, and she was representing Stardom in this match. Most people, I dare say, are probably not familiar with her and have never seen her wrestle before. Didn't know hardly anything about her other than she's second generation. Ulf Herman is her father. She's 21. That's about all I know. It's about all anybody knows. So if you're somebody who, for the first time, you're getting to see this woman, I thought that she did very, very well. I thought she was very impressive. She, you know, had some memorable spots here in this match. She was really good playing the monster role. You know, she played her part. So much so that if I'm Stardom, I'm making... Now, she's only been there 2 months. I don't know what her contract status is, but if I'm Stardom, I am locking her down as quickly as possible because the sharks are circling. This is what happened a few years ago at Forbidden Door when Mercedes worked with Stephanie Vaquer. Now, WWE already knew who Stephanie was. They already had eyes on her, but it took that match to kind of be like, all right, we got to act on this now. And then within weeks, she was signed, right? And WWE had her all locked up. So if I'm Stardom, I'm trying to get her locked down for a certain period of time because WWE is going to be watching, and you know AEW is going to be watching, and they're going to want to get their hands on Bozilla. So I'm just saying, they want to hold on to her. They better take care of that real soon if she isn't already signed. Now we had Zack Sabre Jr., the IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, defending his championship against Nigel McGuinness, who had Daniel Garcia in his corner. Daniel Garcia was in the four-way match on Collision last week, where Nigel became number one contender. And it was after that match, and obviously Danny was, you know, very down in the dumps over losing, but it was Nigel who extended a hand and said, I want you to be in my corner. And it just screamed angle alert to me. So he was out there in Nigel's corner. They aired a video package here before any of the entrances that showed McGuinness meeting up with the legendary Johnny Saint in a park somewhere in London. And then they sit down and they're playing chess. And we got a dialogue back and forth, and they're talking to each other. And McGuinness finally calls checkmate. And Johnny says, now you're getting it. Now go do that again at Forbidden Door. Nigel comes out. No Oasis theme for Nigel McGuinness. I thought for old time's sake, Tony might pay to use it here, but no dice. Bryan Danielson was giddy like a kid calling this match. This was just right up his alley. This was just a technical wrestling clinic. This is what he lives for. If you remember when Danielson was on the WWE Network, he was on commentary calling the Cruiserweight Classic many years ago. Might have been him and Mauro doing the Cruiserweight Classic, and he was just in his element. He really, like, that's the Bryan Danielson that we got here on commentary. Walker Stewart also replaced Tony Schiavone again. We got a holy shit chant that broke out as soon as the bell rang. The fans then switched to a this is wrestling chant. Sabre caught McGuinness in a submission hold. Garcia at one point pushed the rope forward to help McGuinness a couple of times, and the referee caught him and admonished him, told him to back off. And Danielson questioned how upset Nigel would be if Garcia ended up getting him disqualified. McGuinness turned Sabre inside out with a lariat and then followed up with a short arm clothesline that yet again turned him inside out. McGuinness covered Sabre, who had a bloody nose at this point, for a near fall. Sabre caught McGuinness in an armbar over the ropes, and Sabre broke the hold at the four count, then dropped to the floor, got right up in Garcia's face. Garcia, you know, he held back, but Sabre knew what he was doing. He was trying to rattle his cage. Sabre went to the ropes. He got cut off by McGuinness, who hit the Tower of London. McGuinness went for the pin. Sabre, though, put his foot on the bottom rope right in front of Garcia for the break. Both men traded pin attempts, including a European clutch by Sabre that only got two. More pin attempts followed, led to Sabre catching McGuinness with the flash pin in one of them to retain the IWGP Championship. After the match was over, McGuinness was very upset. Sabre, though, shook his hand and gave him the ring out of respect. Now, Tony Schiavone was in the ring. So I'm thinking, okay, here we go. Here comes the angle. Because now Garcia's getting into the ring. Nigel's in the ring. Sabre has left. Why is Tony Schiavone there, right? He's going to get some post-match comments. And the fans also thought something was about to happen. Garcia just blew past them, blew past the Schiavone. He spun McGuinness around, and he gave him a hug. And then they left. Schiavone then ended up being there just to announce the attendance, which he said was 18,992. So if you round that up, 19,000 people, which was the largest pro wrestling crowd ever at the O2. But see, that's what happens when you really stop giving as much of a shit about how many people are in the building and you just start charging exorbitant prices to set gate records. That's also what we're seeing going on these days. But good for them. They now own the all-time pro wrestling attendance record at the O2 Arena in London. That now belongs to Tony Khan and AEW. So good on them. It's good to see them get a healthy crowd like that. But in the UK, again, in the UK, that's one of their strongest, if not, frankly, their strongest fan base. They put almost 80,000 people in Wembley Stadium a few years ago. Then they came back and put 50,000 people in Wembley Stadium. Now they put almost 20,000 people here at the O2. They're going back to Wembley next year. That'll be very interesting to go from 80 to 50. They took a year off. Now they're going to go back to Wembley in 2026. What kind of crowd are they going to do in 2026? Will they have Will Ospreay back in time for that show in 2026? That'll be very interesting. As far as the match, it was a great technical style wrestling match, as you would expect. I would expect nothing less from these two. There wasn't any kind of story. So you were going into it just hoping for a great wrestling match. There wasn't even any time to develop a story. You know, Sabre is the IWGP champion. So he's coming over from Japan. The G1 just wrapped up. Nigel just became number one contender in a four-way match. The story, if there was going to be one, was going to be between McGuinness and Garcia. So all that there was here was the potential for a great professional wrestling match. And that's what these two went out there and had. I'm happy for Nigel that he was able to get that moment. You could tell it meant a lot to him. And as far as the Garcia stuff is concerned, I mean, I'm thinking the heel turn is coming. Didn't happen tonight. I do feel it's coming soon. Tonight was not the night. Now they cut to the back after this match, and we see Tekla and Queen Aminata, and they are brawling backstage, presumably still from their match on the pre-show. That was 2 hours ago. So we are led to believe, I guess, that these women have been brawling for the past 2 hours. Now they brawl out into the arena. They're in the aisleway. Sky Blue and Julia Hart run out to assist Tekla to make it a 3-on-1. And the two of them are holding Aminata for Tekla, who does her spider pose. And shout out to the late Bray Wyatt. Made me think of Bray Wyatt, passed away 2 years ago. Can you believe that? 2 years? It's crazy. But she does her spider pose, and that is the cue for them to hit Jamie Hayter's music. And out she comes, and all the fans at the O2 in London, they go crazy for her. We have not seen Jamie Hayter since her loss to Mercedes Moné in the Owen Hart tournament. What was that at this point? 3 months ago? 4 months ago? It's been a while. So Sky Blue and Julia Hart, they get leveled. Tekla dodges the Haterade clothesline. And the triangle of madness, they bail. Hayter goes to tend to Aminata. I have to say, you know, the Aminata Tekla stuff has been, from what I've seen of it, I've seen some of the collision stuff, and I've seen whatever they've done on Dynamite, which is rare for them to be on Dynamite, but it's a solid, you know, mid-card women's feud that really comes off like these two women don't like each other. They've done a really good job of building up this bad blood between them. So this is not like a random sort of thing here. I mean, this is something that has been building and building and building for weeks. These two women do not like one another. So I like that aspect of it. And I definitely think they could be doing more with both women, including Aminata. And hopefully we'll see them continue to ascend in the division. Great to see Jamie Hayter back. That was a brutal, it was like a DDT. I remember her head got spiked into the mat in that match with Mercedes. And I don't know if that's what put her out, but I would be shocked if it wasn't. So thankfully she's back now. And if they can get her back healthy, that's a huge addition to the women's division. And she was saying into the camera, she's coming for Tekla. Now, after this, we had what was originally listed as an elimination three-way match for the AEW Tag Team Championship. It ended up not being an elimination match, and there was nothing said about this. It just wasn't an elimination match. So, very odd that they would announce it as one and list it in the graphic as one, and then it ends up not being an elimination match. Make of that what you will. With the Hurt Syndicate defending their titles against FTR and against Brodito, the team of Brody King and the Ring of Honor World Champion Bandido. MVP was not out there with the Hurt Syndicate. Also, very strange why he wasn't there. Both teams went after because he was there on Wednesday. You know, they were in Glasgow. So he was on the show on Wednesday. Not sure why he wouldn't have been here. Today's episode is sponsored by Mint Mobile. Don't get burned by your wireless bill. Don't do it. You should be out enjoying the summer, traveling, going to barbecues, hitting the beach. The sun might burn you, but don't let your wireless provider do the same. That's why I made the switch to Mint Mobile. I could only see Ryan Reynolds on my TV so many times before I had to see what all the fuss was about for myself. And my only regret is that I wish I would have made the switch sooner. With Mint, you can get the coverage and speed that you're used to, but for a lot less than you're paying right now. And for a limited time, Mint Mobile is offering 3 months of unlimited premium wireless service for just $15 a month. That's less than half the cost of an AEW pay-per-view. And as great as those can be to watch, you'll get a lot more use out of this. Say goodbye to your overpriced wireless plan and those depressing monthly bills and unexpected overages. Mint Mobile is here to be your knight in shining armor. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text, delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. Use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number with you, along with all of your existing contacts. Ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of unlimited service from Mint Mobile for only $15 a month. In the time I've been using Mint, I can't say that I've had any complaints about their service. It's been fast, reliable. I haven't had to deal with any dropped calls or, hey, you sounded like you were underwater there for a minute. I'm not underwater. I am not a fish. I'm very much a land mammal, and that's how I should sound when I'm on the phone with someone. Plus, when I see my bill now as compared to what it used to be, it really drives home how many people there are out there paying way more than they should be for the same basic service. If you fall into that category, it's not too late to make the switch. In fact, now is a great time to make the switch with this special offer to Sound Off listeners. This year, skip breaking a sweat and breaking the bank. Get this new customer offer and your 3 month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month at mintmobile.com/Solomonster. That's mintmobile.com/Solomonster. Upfront payment of $45 required, equivalent to $15 a month. Limited time new customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds may slow above 35 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Taxes and fees extra. See Mint Mobile for details. But both teams went after the champions at the start. One of the highlights of this was when Lashley and Brody King came face-to-face in the ring, and the crowd reacted to it in a major way. And they went at it, and the crowd was really up for it. Lashley put King down with a spine buster. Brody, though, popped right back up, dropped Lashley with a clothesline. When Lashley got up, King clotheslined him over the top rope to the floor. Bandido performed a fall-away moonsault slam while holding Dax Harwood off the top rope onto the pile of wrestlers on the floor, which was kind of crazy. Lashley and Benjamin got Brody back in the ring. Benjamin hit him with a high knee in the corner, and then Lashley speared Brody when suddenly, everything was going well here. And then all of a sudden, we have a group of masked wrestlers in New Japan jackets that show up at ringside and they attack the Hurt Syndicate. And the masked men, they worked over Lashley and Benjamin with a weapon. I think it might have been a pipe. This was in the aisleway. And that effectively eliminated the Hurt Syndicate from this match, because after this, they were a non-factor. Meanwhile, Dax blasted Brody in the head with an unprotected chair shot to the head, which was very dumb. The masked men then revealed themselves to be Ricochet and the Gates of Agony. You can almost hear the groan in the building, because why, right? Yeah, you look at this initially and you think, well, why would they be out here? And there actually is a potential storyline reason why they would be out there, although this was never explored. So the timing of the reveal, though, was terrible, because when they took the masks off to do the reveal, it came at the exact moment where there was a really big near fall taking place in the ring that we almost missed. So it just felt like it didn't have the impact that it should have had. For the finish of the match, and this is where things just fell apart. For the finish of the match, Brody monkey flipped his own partner. He monkey flipped Bandido over onto Dax, who was on the mat. And he didn't land it flush. So that looked a little wonky. But he hooked the leg. Obviously, this was supposed to be the finish. He hooked the leg and things fell apart. Because Bandido, I don't even know what happened. He slipped off of Dax. He like came off of Dax. But there was nobody there. It's not like anybody pulled him off or anything like that. So he slips off Dax briefly and the referee holds up his count. Meanwhile, Cash Wheeler dives into the ring as if he's trying to break up the pin and trying to make the save. And the spot clearly was going to be that he dives in and he gets there too late. And Brodito gets the big surprise win. But because the referee held up and now Wheeler's in the ring, he dove into the ring and the match is still in progress. And so Bandido just covers Dax again and then he gets the three. And we have new tag team champions. That is how the 8 month reign of the Hurt Syndicate as the tag team champions comes to an end here. And Cash Wheeler ends up looking like a fucking idiot. This was as bad as it sounds. Not just the botch, but the Ricochet and the Gates of Agony interference. It just completely ruined the finish of the match. From the moment they came out and got involved and then unmasked, and then the shit finish here, I don't want to say it ruined the entire match, but it ruined what should have been a great match, and it definitely took it down a few notches. This was the first real unpredictable finish of the entire show. I certainly didn't see Brodito leaving with the tag team titles. I don't think most people would have seen Brodito leaving with the tag team titles. If anything, I figured they were in the match to take the losing fall so that the Hurt Syndicate wouldn't have to be pinned by FTR. But instead, they actually are the champions, and Bandido now is a double champion because he's also the Ring of Honor World Champion. Now he's got himself an AEW tag team title. There's a story going on here. I'm not exactly sure what all the details are of this story. There were reports that came out in the last few weeks about the Hurt Syndicate and MVP in particular rejecting pitches from, let's be honest, from Tony Khan. Who else would it be from? To have the Hurt Syndicate drop the tag team titles as far back as Texas at All In and to drop them to them at Forbidden Door. That they didn't want to drop the titles to FTR. And supposedly they had floated other names like the Outrunners and Private Party, who they could drop the tag team titles to instead, in the Gates of Agony, which wouldn't have made any sense since they're heels. But apparently not FTR. And I talked about this, and if any of that is true, it's completely ridiculous. MVP and the Hurt Syndicate are not in any position to tell Tony Khan, you know what, we don't want to lose to these guys. Really. The whole thing is just completely stupid. But you look at what happened in Texas, where it would have made sense for FTR to be a part of the title match, and they got left off the main card. They were doing commentary out there for the Hurt Syndicate's match. That was weird. Then these reports come out. They're doing this tournament. And I'm like, I think that very well we could see a draw here in the finals, and maybe they'll send Brodito to the match at Forbidden Door. And it's exactly what ends up happening. And what happens? The Hurt Syndicate gets taken out of the match. Now, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that that shocked me. I was actually expecting that there was a very good chance that could happen. When I thought this was going to be an elimination match, I thought they might go for the shock moment where Brodito actually pins the Hurt Syndicate, not FTR. They pin the Hurt Syndicate to get them out of the match. That then guarantees new tag team champions, and then FTR goes on to beat Brodito. but then the elimination stipulation just disappeared with no explanation. And then sure enough, the Hurt Syndicate, they're spared because Ricochet and GOA, they take care of them. They don't have to be part of the losing fall. And even though I was expecting something like that and I'm not shocked by it, I mean, that is seriously weak shit. These guys ran through every single challenger that Tony Khan put in front of them, from Private Party to the Outrunners to the Gates of Agony to everybody. Everybody. Jet Speed, everybody. Right? Beat them all. Some of them worse than others. Finally, they're going to lose the tag team titles. And they can't even be a part of the losing fall. We have to protect them. So we're going to have somebody else get pinned. And that's how their 8-month reign as tag team champions is going to come to an end. So you put all of these things together. And the one who actually ends up coming out of this, I think, looking the worst is Tony Khan. Because he should be able to say, look, I have a vision for where we want to go here. And it'll mean more maybe if the Hurt Syndicate actually does, you know, fall to these guys or those guys. And instead, everything they did here was just very, very weak. The match itself, up until the collapse there at the end, was actually very good. But I'm more interested in some of the behind the scenes going on here. And maybe that'll come out. We'll see. But I just thought it's a terrible look for him. It's a terrible look for Tony Khan. And it's just very weak that after all this time, the Hurt Syndicate still couldn't do a job to one of these two teams. And they had to send, of all people, Ricochet and the Gates of Agony, who have nothing to do with any of this stuff, send them out there to get involved in the finish of this match. Now, I said that there could be a storyline explanation for this. I thought maybe it was going to play itself out in the World Championship match later in the show, because we saw on Wednesday that MJF had worked out an arrangement with Ricochet and the Gates of Agony to attack Mark Briscoe. They're doing business together. So I see them out there and I'm like, what the fuck is Ricochet and the Gates of Agony doing out here? Well, Hurt Syndicate kicked MJF out of the group a few weeks ago. Nothing's been mentioned about it ever since. And I mean, there were reports that a certain someone within the Hurt Syndicate could be a certain man, possibly, whose last name rhymes with Smashley, didn't want MJF in the group. And that's why it was so sudden, the way they sort of cut him out, and that was the end of the storyline. And here I am thinking, well, maybe there's a way to kind of circle back to it and at least have MJF try to get revenge on the Hurt Syndicate. For all we know, the Hurt Syndicate didn't want to have anything to do with MJF anymore, and that really is the end of the story. But you could easily explain it by saying MJF paid off Ricochet and GOA to cost the Hurt Syndicate the tag team titles. And if the Hurt Syndicate had a sense that maybe this is what happened, then maybe they would have showed up during the Hangman MJF match tonight and cost MJF his chance to become world champion. But then that didn't happen. So I don't know if that's the direction they're going in or not. For this to make any sense whatsoever, it has to be. There's no other logical explanation for why they would have showed up and doing what they did here in this match other than, well, maybe they want to start a program between the Hurt Syndicate and the Gates of Agony. That would be fucking lame if that's how they set it up and that's the only reason we saw them out here. So we'll wait for TV and see if they follow up on this, because to me, the only legitimate explanation for any of this is if MJF was the one behind it. And if not, then this was very, very stupid. So now we look at Brodito. They're the tag team champions. Do they get a short run? Are they going to immediately drop the belts to FTR anyway? Because I still feel like FTR is going to end up with those titles. Are we going into Toronto at All Out next month and having Copeland and Christian against FTR without the titles on the line? You could certainly do that. But whoever Brodito then defends the titles against, unless you make it a three-way, why the fuck not? The last 2 months, the last two pay-per-views, the tag team titles have been contested in three ways. Why not go three in a row? Make it a hat trick. Unless you do that, anybody that Brodito defend the tag team titles against in Toronto, that match, that tag team championship match, is playing second fiddle to Cope and Christian in Canada wrestling FTR. So why would you want your tag team titles to play second fiddle? It would almost be better to have Brodito in there and make it a three-way. Like, you gave away Copeland and Christian their first match in 14 years tonight on this show. That was the attraction in Toronto. You gave it away tonight. That's fine. The next attraction would be them challenging for the tag team titles. But to do that, they would have to wrestle FTR. So could FTR end up with the belts between now and then? It's certainly possible, but it's almost like a no-win situation now because you've now changed the tag team titles once. Do you really want to change the tag team titles again in the next couple of weeks and then potentially a third time at All Out? Because now you're just hotshotting it. And that I don't see as being a good thing. So I don't know how long Brodito is going to have these belts for. I don't think they're going to have them for very long. But yeah, I don't know what they would then do in Toronto unless you add them to that match with Copeland and Christian and FTR, if we assume that's the direction that we're headed in. So it was a very surprising decision here. Like I said, the first really unpredictable finish on the entire show. And things were going pretty well until we hit the last 90 seconds or so, and then this just fell apart. We had Kazuchika Okada defending the Continental Championship against Swerve Strickland. I'm sorry, the Unified Championship. God, there's so many fucking belts in this company. He's still carrying around the Continental title and the International title, but it's the Unified Championship. I stand corrected. I got to get my title straight here in this company. So he was defending the Unified title. Jim Ross joined on commentary for this one and immediately was disappointed that he had to be seated next to Don Callis. Continental title rules. See, this is why I was confused. Continental title rules were enforced here in this match, which meant no interference allowed, which meant Prince Nana had to go to the back. Prince Nana could not be at ringside for this match. But Don Callis, who manages Okada, he was allowed at ringside because he was doing commentary. Why can't Prince Nana say, hey, I want to do commentary too? He didn't think to do that. So Nana had to stay in the back, but it was okay for Don Callis to be out there. Right? Ridiculous. That will never not be ridiculous. I don't care how many times this happens. It will never not be ridiculous. Now, Swerve, for those who don't know, is dealing with a legitimate knee injury. He has a torn meniscus in his knee. He has had that torn meniscus in his knee for 6 years. When he tore his meniscus, he was at the WWE Performance Center. That's how long he's had this for. And evidently, whatever happened, he aggravated it recently, and it's become a real issue. Prior to tonight, he had not wrestled since a match with, I believe, Etchicero on July 23rd. And there was a report that Tony Khan has had him working with the medical team from the Jacksonville Jaguars, trying to get him whatever aid he needs to heal or at least heal up enough to be in this match. And, you know, watching him out there, he was fine. I mean, he didn't look like he was limping around or anything until he was selling as part of the match. So, I mean, he was able to work the match fine. But they incorporated that into the story of the match. Early on, he got sent over the top rope. He landed on his feet, for example, and he begins to sell the knee. Okada had a long run of offense. Swerve came back and held Okada's wrist as both men got to their feet. Swerve then hit him with a few clotheslines, hit a stomp from the middle rope, and then covered Okada for two. Swerve ended up on the ropes. Okada shoved him, and it caused Swerve's leg to bend at a very awkward angle, and he got his leg caught in the ropes. Okada joined him on the ropes and then drove Swerve's knee into the top turnbuckle. Strickland missed the Swerve stomp off the apron on the floor. He came up limping. Okada answered with a tombstone. And back inside, there were some short arm lariats from Okada who tried a rainmaker. Strickland countered, though, into a house call kick. Swerve got a series of short arm lariats of his own. He wanted another one. Actually, another house call. Okada saw it coming with a drop kick, though. Strickland avoided a rainmaker. Okada hit another drop kick. A third rainmaker attempt got countered, this time with Strickland hitting a pop-up power slam. The Swerve stomp was delivered, but at what cost? At what cost? Strickland came up clutching his bad leg. Okada rolled out to the apron. He cut off Swerve in the corner, hit a knee breaker on the top turnbuckle. Swerve managed to fire off a desperation house call kick, but as he called for one more, Okada ducked it and hit the Rainmaker, and all it took was one. One Rainmaker, and he got the win. I like that. After the match was over, Okada got Swerve's right knee between the ring post and the ring steps, and he just started battering him with chair shots. Prince Nana finally ran out with a pipe. All these pipes. who is laying down all this pipe all over the place here in AEW? There's pipes everywhere. So he runs out with a pipe, caused Okada to drop the chair, and he exits stage left. Okada and Callis, they're standing in the aisleway, and they're looking on as someone appears behind Prince Nana in the ring. And I'm looking at this guy, and I think I know who it is, but it's a little hard to tell at first. It's not like I had this guy on the brain thinking he was going to be back anytime soon, but sure enough, I'm looking, and it is Wardlow. He's back. The last time we saw Wardlow in the ring, probably the last time we saw Wardlow at all, was Big Business. The Big Business episode of Dynamite. That was in March of last year. That was the night Mercedes Moné made her debut in AEW. It has been almost 18 months since we have seen Wardlow. Now, I know he had some, I think, a knee issue. And I know recently he was off filming American Gladiators, which is being hosted by The Miz. Might have to check that out when it comes out. So 18 months later, he has returned. After much failure in his career, Wardlow has returned. And I thought the reaction on commentary for this was actually pretty underwhelming. It wasn't as underwhelming as when Christian returned to WWE as part of ECW, but it was pretty underwhelming. Wardlow clotheslined Prince Nana. Then he mounted Nana, and he started throwing punches down at him. Swerve is in the corner looking up at this, and he's helpless. Got the bad knee, and he can't do anything to save his friend. All he could do is watch. Security geeks entered the ring to hold back Wardlow, and that did not go very well for them because that's what makes them security geeks. They're not very good at their job. So Wardlow beats them up single file, one by one. He clotheslines one guy. He power bombs another guy. The other guy ate an F5. Wardlow then exited the ring, and he goes over and he gives a hug to Don Callis and Kazuchika Okada, confirming that he is indeed either part of the Callis family or a hired gun. I mean, he's part of the family. I mean, let's just call it what it is. He's part of the Don Callis family. Josh Alexander comes out as well. Etchicero, Kyle Fletcher, Lance Archer, Rocky Romero. They all make their way out to celebrate with these guys in the aisle where they're all welcoming Wardlow into the family. Konosuke Takeshita's music hits and everybody cheers, and he gets his own separate entrance. And what's going to happen here? What does he think about all this, right? The winner of the G1 Climax, who just got back from Japan. So he comes down the aisle and he goes face to face with Wardlow. Then he smirks. And yeah, he didn't shake his hand or hug him or anything, but he kind of fell back in line and everything's cool. And the family is all together. The Don Callis family stuff is just out of control. It seriously. I made the comment, I'm like watching this and I'm like, I think there may be more members of the Don Callis family than I have had yellow jackets in this apartment all weekend. That's a lot. Okay. So there's a lot of members and I counted 8. Out there tonight. Okay, so I counted 8 members. And that, by the way, that doesn't even include Trent Beretta, who wasn't there. And that doesn't include Brian Cage, who wasn't there, because Brian Cage had a knee replacement a few months ago. So he is still recuperating from that. I would assume he's still technically part of the family. When he comes back, he'll be part of the family with Lance Archer. They were doing the tag team thing, the Murder Monsters. So we have 10 official members of the Don Callis family. I mean, it's like the bloodline. It's like their bloodline, but without the tribal tats. That's basically what we have here. This family just keeps growing. It keeps multiplying. I don't even know that Bobby Heenan had this many members in the Heenan family. This was Okada's first title defense since he won the championship and beat Kenny Omega. They spent time here in the build-up to this match. You know, playing the last couple weeks, really playing up Swerve's knee injury, which came out of nowhere because it was never mentioned before. And all of a sudden last week on TV, Swerve comes out and there's this mention of a knee injury. I'm like, what are you talking about? What knee injury? So it's a real injury and they incorporated it, you know, into the story, but it just came out of nowhere because nothing was really mentioned about this beforehand. All of a sudden that became the story. And that also became an out for Swerve because he was favoring the knee. And I mean, honestly, Okada beat him straight up, if we're being honest here, but the knee did play a factor here in the loss. And then they did the injury angle after the match, so Swerve is going to be going away for a while. The match itself, it was good. It was not at the level of a lot of the matches that Swerve has had just this year alone, or the Okada match with Kenny Omega at All In. Those, you know, all those matches, the matches Swerve has had, and the All In match with Kenny and Okada, those were, you know, much better than this. It was still a good match. Putting Wardlow with the Callis family, look, it's good to see him back on TV. I'll believe it when I see it, when it comes to a serious Wardlow push that actually leads to something, because we've been burned by this before. I think Wardlow, he got over in a big way 3 years ago. It's been a long time since Wardlow reached his peak of popularity in AEW. It was after the split with MJF. A lot of shit has gone down since then, including injuries, but also a lot of bad booking. As much as the injuries may have wreaked havoc with things, so has Tony Khan's booking of Wardlow. And he should not be excused for that. So whatever momentum this man had 3 years ago where it looked like, hey, you know, he could be a really big homegrown star. Like in the way they're pushing Kyle Fletcher now, and they put the TNT title on him. They put the TNT title on Wardlow at 1.2. But it just didn't work out. And it's not like Wardlow all of a sudden, like, he started to have shitty matches or he stopped caring, you know. It had nothing to do with that. It was just a series of unfortunate circumstances and bad booking that led to this man being in purgatory for 3 years. So now he's back, and the first thing they do is they lump him into another faction. We've seen this story before. He was in the Pinnacle, and then he was part of the Undisputed Kingdom. And how did that work out? That didn't work out too well. Now they're going to try again. We'll have him in the Callis family, and he'll be one of 10 fucking people in this group. So it's incumbent upon them to do something with him that is going to make him stand out amongst 10 people in this group. That's my concern with lumping him into this faction. Kyle Fletcher, he's doing okay. He's the kind of the crown jewel of the group, and Takeshita. Where does Wardlow fit into this? Can they build a story around Wardlow and have him maybe at some point down the road be a breakout star? I hope so. I hope there's some kind of plan here for him. But what I see right now is he's back, and you've just, like Josh Alexander. Josh Alexander debuted in AEW, and within a week, he became a background player in the Don Callis family. He's just in the background. I don't want to see that happen to Wardlow. There's still the potential there for him to be something special. If you can find the right story and you book him in the right way and he can stay healthy, there could still be something there. It's harder to do when you're just one of 10. You know, we see tons of factions, tons of wrestling factions on TV every single week. WWE, AEW, some factions are bigger than others. Some have 3 or 4 people. Some have 5 or 6. You start talking about 9, 10, 11, you know, a dozen different people, you're getting into NWO territory here. And that isn't necessarily a good thing. But it's only the first night. He's back. That's the first step. We'll see where they go from here. All I can tell you is the one thing I am convinced of, I stand steadfast in this, Okada and the Unified Championship, the match to build to, Okada and Takeshita. Takeshita will be that first breakout babyface star from this group. And it will come through Okada and beating Okada to win the Unified title. I do believe that. Now after this, we had Timeless Toni Storm against Athena for the AEW Women's World Championship, having cashed in her Casino Gauntlet contract here to get this shot. There was an early baseball slide that sent Athena crashing into the barricade, and when Billy Starks, who was out there at Athena's corner, tried to get into Tony's face, she suffered a quick Storm Zero for her troubles. Athena flew in with a shotgun dropkick, caused Tony to hit the LED barricade, not super hard, but I guess it was hard enough that they deactivated the LED board. It went out. So it was all Athena after that. She drove Tony's head repeatedly into the ring post. Later in the match, Tony had Athena in a chicken wing, but Athena broke free, flung Tony out to the floor, and then she hit her with a suicide dive. Athena set up for a pile driver on the ring steps, but Storm bit her knee and then tripped her, which caused Athena's head to hit the ring steps. Storm sent Athena into the barricade, and wouldn't you know it, the LED board had got turned back on. Back in the ring, Storm hit Storm Zero, only for a near fall. Excalibur called it like any other sequence. Tony Schiavone called it a monumental kickout. A monumental kickout, he said. It might have been. It might have been if we hadn't seen a bunch of other people already kick out of it, including Mercedes Moné just last month in Texas, who kicked out of three of them. Then it might have been a monumental kickout. Monumental is not the word I would use for it. So Storm got Athena on the apron, set up for Storm Zero. Billy Starks yanked on the ring skirt until Storm released Athena, and Storm then stared at Billy while Athena went up top, hit an O-face, but it was only to hang Tony's neck over the top rope because she was standing on the apron. Starks grabbed a chair when Mina Shirakawa, who's been out, I believe, with a broken hand, and so she ran out there. She took the chair away from Billy and then chased her to the back. Inside the ring, both women traded pin attempts. Athena came off the top rope for another O-face, but she dove into the clutches of the TCM chicken wing. And she struggled, and she fought, and she tried to resist, but in the end, she taps out. And Timeless Toni Storm remains your AEW Women's World Champion. They gave Athena a lot of offense here. They had a good match. I know they could have an even better match. This was not on the level of the match that Tony had with Mercedes in Texas last month. You know what? I know some people are going to have a real issue with Athena tapping out. I didn't really mind it so much. It didn't bother me because I like that Tony has demonstrated now that she has another way to beat you. You know, it's not just Storm Zero, but she has the chicken wing. So I like it when people have a couple of different signature moves, two or three even, that they could potentially beat you with. With the loss, though, Athena has now wasted her Casino Gauntlet contract. She had her shot. She squandered it. She is not the AEW Women's Champion. What happens now? The worst thing that could happen is that back to Ring of Honor with you. You're banished back to ROH because she's still the ROH Women's Champion, the forever champion. And I said coming into the show, she's not winning this championship. I'd love to see it, but there's only room for one belt collector on this show. In that division. I guess Bandido is a belt collector now too. He's got two titles. But in the women's division, there's only room for one belt collector. Can't have more than one. So if she had dropped the ROH title prior to this, I would have bought into the idea a little bit more that, you know what, maybe she'll win. But I never honestly believed she was going to win the championship. So now that she hasn't, and you would assume Toni Storm is just going to move on to the next, I don't know what that means for Athena's future. She should remain on the active AEW roster. She should remain on AEW television. I don't know who she would feud with next. There's plenty of women in the division. If she's not wrestling for the championship, obviously she'll be pushed down. I don't know if they might want to revisit Mercedes and Athena at some point. They're both heels. They might not want to do that. They were just tag team partners the other night on TV. But she belongs on the AEW women's roster. She's going to have to drop the ROH title at some point. That's fine. She could still do those matches. But I don't want this to be a case where she had her shot and she just disappears back into the abyss. That would be terrible. That's the one thing I do not want to see. She needs to be a regular on TV. As far as Toni Storm, she has now pinned the TBS champion. She has now pinned the Ring of Honor Forever Women's Champion. Where does she go from here? I don't know. Who's left? Who's left? She beat Mercedes. She beat Athena. She banished Mariah May. She beat Megan Bain. Who's next? Who's left? There's two names that strike me. You got Chris Statlander. Chris Statlander is in the middle of a feud in the middle of the card with Willow Nightingale. That doesn't seem very likely. And then there's a certain someone who just returned on the show tonight by the name of Jamie Hayter. Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm have a history together. In fact, the last time Jamie Hayter was the AEW Women's World Champion, if I remember correctly, she was beaten by Toni Storm back when she was still part of the, what was the group that she was a part of with Ruby Riott and Saraya, the Outcasts. And also, I believe they had a match at Full Gear a few years ago that was really good. So there's history there between them. Now, Jamie just came back. She's going to be feuding with Tekla for a while. It's not going to be an overnight thing. But if she can stay healthy, you begin to build her back up to that level. Within a few months, you could do Jamie Hayter and Toni Storm for the Women's World Championship. I would love to see it. I would love to see those two women back in the ring together. I don't see there being another obvious name that jumps out at me right now as far as who that next challenger or even who that woman could be that's finally going to take that title from her. Do they go back to Mercedes after Mercedes loses the TBS title? That's not happening, at least until October. So, sure, yeah, you can go back to Tony and Mercedes in November, maybe World's End in December. What do you do now? I don't know, but I would like to see them begin to really build Jamie Hayter up, not even for the TBS title, but for this spot. And speaking of titles, we had the AEW World Championship. Hangman Adam Page defending against MJF with some conditions, and those conditions are as follows. The title can change hands on a countout. The title can change hands on a disqualification, as well as pinfall or submission. Now, unlike Athena, this was not for the Casino Gauntlet contract, so he still has that as an insurance policy. It also made it a lot less likely that he was going to win the championship in this match and still have the contract. So it did make the outcome a little more obvious. Hangman was kicking his ass early on. He even sent him over the barricade into the front row. Hangman grabbed a chair, and Bryce Remsburg got up and warned him, think about what you're about to do here, right? Because he'd be disqualified. He'll lose his title. So he dumped the chair, but then MJF sent him into the ring post. Page avoided a heat seeker and went for the buckshot lariat. MJF countered into his salt of the earth armbar submission. Page rolled MJF into a pin to break the hold, then put him in a crossface. MJF rolled Page onto his back and got a two count that forced Page to release the hold. MJF went to ringside, picked up the timekeeper's table over his head, which he... Actually, this was kind of funny because the timekeeper's table had some sort of like a black cloth over it. So when he picked the table up, the black cloth was hanging down. So like as he's carrying this table above his head, all you see is just this black veil under the chair. Like the Grim Reaper is walking. And then he places the table down right at the foot of the aisleway. And that's where he positions the table. MJF then places Page on top of the table. He goes up to the ropes. Page, though, shot up. He went to the apron. MJF raked his eyes. He dropped down to the apron. Hangman knocked MJF to the floor and then hit him with his Orihara moonsault. And then hit a tombstone piledriver. And both men were down on the floor. Both men were back on the apron when Page grabbed MJF and he gave him a dead eye through the table down on the ground below. And for some reason, this was not a disqualification. Now, I know that MJF is the one who introduced the table into this situation, but that shouldn't matter. And I've seen situations before on these shows where somebody uses the steps and people have said, well, that's not a disqualification because technically the steps are a part of the ring. Now, of course, none of this really makes a whole lot of sense because if that's the case, like if parts of the ring are all legal and within bounds, then why the fuck would anybody worry about pulling a turnbuckle pad off behind the referee's back, right? Then none of that should matter. So that's stupid enough. But the table is not part of the ring. It is a weapon. It is a foreign object that has been introduced into this match, whether it's in the ring or on the floor. It shouldn't matter. And Hangman Page just put this man through a table. This was not a disqualification. MJF should be the AEW World Champion right then and there. But he's not. The match rolled on. Page got MJF back inside. He covered him. MJF put his foot on the bottom rope for the break. Page set up for a buckshot. MJF, though, rolled to the floor and then sat down on a chair outside. Page ran towards MJF, who shot up and used the drop toe hold to drive Hangman's face down into the chair. Then MJF ran Hangman into the ring steps. Then he looked over at Bryan Danielson on commentary, and he said, just like you, he fucking sucks. Which is a very mean thing to say to Bryan Danielson. So while that was going on, Hangman went to the blade, because when they cut back to him, he was busted open. MJF went back to ringside. He hit a leaping tombstone pile driver to Hangman on a piece of the broken table from earlier, and that piece did not break. The referee started his count. Page returned to the ring just before the 10 count. MJF removed one of the turnbuckle pads and tried to run Hangman into it. Hangman reversed it. And MJF came up sporting a crimson mask of his own. And at that point, the fans chanted, "You deserve it," at him, which was kind of funny. So I have people in the chat saying, not a DQ, it's referee's discretion. Well, the referees are all very stupid in this company, so I guess that kind of makes sense. When you consider that, then it all makes sense. So both men reversed tombstone attempts. Paige actually fell over at one point. They went into trading pins that led to a series of two counts, and then one counts after that. Paige went for a jackknife pin, but MJF bridged out of it. Paige hit him with a deadeye for a near fall. Paige ordered MJF to stand and fight. MJF is on his knees. He's looking up at him, and MJF pulls out the dynamite diamond ring. And he orders Hangman to use it. Go ahead and use it. Because if he uses it, he gets disqualified. Although it's the referee's discretion, so maybe not. But he's telling him, use this. Go ahead. I dare you. Use it. Right? And Hangman, he's tempted to. But if he does, he loses his championship. And then MJF spits at him. Spits up right in his face. So instead, Hangman spits back in MJF's face. MJF then pulls Bryce Remsburg into harm's way for a buckshot. Paige, though, stops short before wiping him out. But then MJF shoved Hangman into Bryce Remsburg, who took a bump. MJF then hit a low blow and a heat seeker to Hangman. MJF made the cover. Here comes Bryce Remsburg. He took a bump, but it's not like he's knocked unconscious or anything. So he comes over to make the cover. Paige got his foot on the bottom rope after the one count. Okay, his foot is plainly on the bottom rope. And inexplicably, Bryce Remsburg, not only is he not looking at the shoulders, not like in a position to be looking at Hangman's shoulders, he's not even looking at where his feet are. He's just blindly counting. And so he counts two, and he counts three. And everybody is shocked. Now, he never officially called for the bell. And they never played MJF's music, but they zoomed in on MJF. He's sitting there, oh my God, look, he thinks he won the championship, right? And, you know, what happened here also is very reminiscent of what happened on Dynamite a few weeks ago when MJF beat Mark Briscoe. Mark Briscoe got his foot on the bottom rope, but MJF moved it aside. Referee didn't see the foot. And that's how MJF beat Mark Briscoe, which I assume would earn him a number one contenders match. It ended up not really meaning anything. So as all of this is going on, they hit Mark Briscoe's music. Reach for the sky, boys. And here he comes. He comes out. He doesn't even make it to the ring. Security has swarmed him. They are holding him back from getting in the ring. And they escort him right to the back. MJF turns back. He sees the foot. Hangman's foot is still on the bottom rope. Right? Like a minute has gone by. His foot is still on the rope. So he goes over to try to brush it off. Bryce catches him, though. Oh, the foot! Now, look. I have seen plenty of stuff in wrestling matches where the referee says, somebody tries to argue, my foot was on the rope, my foot was on the rope. Like, in the moment. They just got their foot on the rope in time, but the ref didn't see it. The ref's like, I didn't see it. How do I know you didn't just put your foot on the rope? Hangman had, like, at least a minute. Maybe 90 seconds, okay, to put his fucking foot on the bottom rope. But now that Bryce sees the foot, like a year later, oh, the foot is on the bottom rope. This match must continue. This was so dumb. This part of the match was very, very dumb. It's just very dumb. But that's twice now. That's twice in the same match that MJF should have been the AEW World Champion. And was screwed. I mean, Hangman kind of was screwed, if you think about it. But in his mind, screwed out of the championship, which I'm sure will come up on television this week. So they both shove one another. Paige hit a lariat. MJF threw a low blow as he held on to Bryce. So the referee didn't see it. MJF got a roll up only for two. MJF threw the AEW title in the ring. Remsburg took it away, though, allowing MJF to hit Paige instead with his casino gauntlet contract case. He whacked the shit out of him right in the head with it. He covered him, and Paige kicked out at two. That was a great near fall. MJF went back to the diamond ring. He was about to use it. Bryce caught him. He removed it. This gave Hangman a chance to get revenge by waffling MJF with his own contract case. Again, he blasted him right in the head with it. And he followed that with a deadeye, And then the Buckshot Lariat to finish him off for the 1-2-3. And Hangman Adam Page is still the AEW World Champion. So this was my favorite match of the entire show. Despite all of the bullshit and the silliness and the nonsense that I just described to you, even despite that, this was still, in my opinion, the best match, and it was my favorite match on the entire show. And there was plenty of ridiculousness here in this match. It was very overbooked there towards the end. But the crowd was hot for it. They bought into those late near falls. They were very, very happy, elated to see Hangman retain in the end. I thought it was excellent. Despite all of it, I thought it was excellent. And MJF still has the Casino Gauntlet contract. It never should have been on the line here to begin with. They obviously backtracked and decided, okay, this is kind of stupid, so, you know, we'll hit the undo button. It's like, you know, they're a Microsoft Word. Let's hit the undo button on what we've done here. And so he still has the contract as a backup. That's his, you know, insurance policy. But every trick that he tried, every shortcut he tried to take here in this match, it was ineffective. It blew up in his face. I was waiting to see if the Hurt Syndicate might come out, you know, to cost MJF. You know, I even said, you know, coming into this, Mark Briscoe might come out and stop him from using the diamond ring. You could have had the Hurt Syndicate do the same thing, even if it was just a distraction, you know, not them necessarily beating him up when the referee was down, which you could have done that too. You know, Bryce Remsburg could have taken a bump, and here comes Bobby Lashley and Shelton Benjamin, who suspect that MJF is the one who sent Ricochet and the GOA out there earlier to cost them their titles. So fuck you, we're going to cost you the world title. Nope. No Hurt Syndicate. No idea if they're going to pursue that angle of the story or not. If it was just a random attack in that tag team title match, again, I just think that was a very dumb thing to do. But this was the best match on the entire show. This week's episode is sponsored by Green Chef. When you think about summer, you want to have your best beach bod, right? And what you eat has a lot to do with that. But even when the summer comes to an end, that doesn't make it okay to just start eating whatever you want, regardless of how bad it may be for you. Like, that's my attitude. I want to make sure I'm eating well all year round because my health is important. It's about adopting eating habits that I know I can stick to. That's the beauty of Green Chef, the number one meal kit for clean eating. Green Chef makes it easy to spend less time in the kitchen and more time doing the other things that you would rather be doing this summer. And with their new Heat and Eat meals, you could enjoy a delicious meal in under 3 minutes with fresh, organic, seasonal produce and 100% responsibly sourced proteins to help you feel your best. We're talking real ingredients. Enjoy salads ready in just 5 minutes, protein-filled breakfasts, or nutrient-filled smoothies to fuel your entire day. With 80-plus dietitian-approved weekly meal options, Green Chef makes it easy to find meals that fit your lifestyle, from Mediterranean and gluten-free to plant-based and protein-heavy to gut and brain health and calorie-smart options, too. The recipes change every week, and with week-to-week flexibility, you can adjust your plan to match your mood and your schedule. As someone that has tried Green Chef for myself and had meals sent right to my doorstep, I can vouch for how easy they are to make and the fact that they passed my taste test. One of my favorite meals I had a while back was their chicken with basil pea stew with roasted red peppers and jasmine rice. It was fantastic. It's hard to mess up a chicken dish with me, but it has been done before. Thankfully, this wasn't one of those times. As far as getting everything together, it was super easy. You know, they list out everything you need, any food allergens that you need to know about, which I appreciate. And it was a great time saver for me before getting ready to go to work and do some live streaming for you guys. Make this summer your healthiest yet with Green Chef. Head to greenchef.com/50solomonster and use code 50solomonster to get 50% off your first month, then 20% off for 2 months with free shipping. That's code 50solomonster at greenchef.com/50solomonster. And then we come to the closing of the show. See, that was technically the official main event, but now we get to the unofficial portion of the show. And at this point, Bryan Danielson excused himself from commentary due to what he said, personal issues that he has with certain members of this match coming up, this unsanctioned match. So he left. Jim Ross took his place. For the 5-on-5 lights out steel cage match, with Will Ospreay, Darby Allin, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, and The Ace. the ace, Hiroshi Tanahashi, his final ever match here in the UK, taking on John Moxley, Claudio Castagnoli, Gabe Kidd, and the Young Bucks. Now, the cage they used, it wasn't very high, but it encompassed most of the ringside area, all but the announce desks. That's where it ended. So the announcers were safe. Poor Jim Ross was not trapped inside this cage with these crazy people. For some reason, they already had tables that were set up outside the ring. Justin Roberts announced that AEW would not be held responsible for what happens here in this next match. I mean, look, it may be unsanctioned, but they gave everybody a proper entrance. Everybody got their usual entrance. Everybody got their theme music. Looked pretty official to me. Ospreay was the last entrant for the babyface team. There was a video package that played for him with highlights of his career there right before he came out. It was narrated by his fiance, Alex Windsor, the soon-to-be Mrs. Bruv. And it was the superstar entrance that you would have expected him to get here in London, effectively for what is his farewell match before he goes off to have surgery. The Young Bucks came out, and they had their music cut off. Within 5 seconds of it playing, they cut the music off, they cut the Tron off, it all went black. And then they put the basic, you know, Matt and Nick, like Nickelodeon graphics up. And they started playing M-Bop by Hanson. They played fucking M-Bop for the Young Bucks. 1997 called. They want their music back. When I heard them coming out to this song, like, this was fucking great. I had a nice laugh at this. This was fucking great. Although I will say, you pay, Tony, you pay for M-Bop, but you can't pay for Oasis for Nigel. Come on, man. What's going on here? What's going on here? So the Bucks were all pissed when they heard the music. The Death Riders and Gabe Kidd, they entered through the crowd. Excalibur confirmed that All In will return to Wembley Stadium next August. The Bucks brought a bag into the ring, which was left by the production member that they had instructed to find the most dangerous weapon that they could find. And they emptied it out, thinking it was going to be thumbtacks or maybe broken glass or something. And it ended up being gummy bears. And the Bucks were annoyed. John Moxley was not happy about this. Ospreay got busted open at ringside after being launched into the side of the cage. Claudio pressed Darby over his head. Military pressed him up, launched him like a lawn dart, clear into the side of the cage. He took a hell of a bump there. Darby also got busted open. Not on that spot. He got busted open. There was a ladder, if I remember, that was up against the corner turnbuckles. And I think Darby took a bump on the ladder and he fucked up his ear because his ear was all mangled and bloody and blood was just pouring out of the side of his head. And as blood is pouring out of his head, the Death Riders, they duct tape him to a chair, arms and all, so he can't move. He is completely defenseless here. John Moxley then pulls out a fork, and he begins to jab the fork repeatedly into Darby's ear and through his bloody earlobe. He's putting the fork through the earlobe and he's yanking on it and he's stabbing him with it. And the blood is, it's just, the camera zoomed on it. He's twisting it and he's stabbing him with it. This was completely disgusting. I know that Moxley loves this kind of shit, but you know, the AEW torture porn stuff that we sometimes see them do, I'm not a fan of it. So this might've done something for you. It might've felt, had you feel in a certain way, this didn't do shit for me. I thought this was just completely disgusting and stupid. Then Claudio picked up the chair and he body slammed Darby while he's still duct taped to the chair. He body slammed him in the chair. The Young Bucks pulled a barbed wire table out from under the ring. The Bucks set it up inside. Moxley wanted a Death Rider. Ospreay, though, tackled him through the barbed wire instead. Omega hit a Terminator dive at one point, and as if they intended it that way, and I don't know if they did, the camera cut to Marina Shafir outside the ring at the exact moment that she decided to yell, "Fuck you, Kenny." The announcers didn't acknowledge it. They cut away. It's like great timing on that. Later on, Ospreay and Omega, they hit a Hidden Blade V-Trigger combo on Gabe Kidd. They had him beat. Kidd's teammates, though, broke up the pin. Omega put Moxley down with a one-winged angel and had him beaten, but that got broken up as well. Moxley, who was bleeding from the forehead, so as not to feel left out here, because if other people are bleeding, John Moxley has to bleed. So he set up a ladder next to the side of the cage. He wanted Wheeler Yuta to climb inside. Moxley climbed over the side of the cage and went to the floor. Darby bit the head of Yuta and punched him until he fell off the cage and onto the Japanese announce desk. They had a Japanese announce desk right next to the English announce desk. Darby exited the cage. He went after Moxley, who was trying to get away. Darby got Moxley underneath one of the tables that was stacked. They had tables that were, I think it was four tables, two layers side by side, but they had these tables stacked right outside the ring at the foot of the aisleway. And he has Moxley just kind of bent over, leaning on one of the tables underneath the top one. And Darby's climbing the cage. And again, not a very tall cage. This is not the cage, for example, that Will Ospreay wrestled, you know, Kyle Fletcher in a few months ago. This is not the cage they use for Blood and Guts. So it's high enough where, you know, you've got some decent height, but it's not like super, super tall. But Darby climbs to the top of the cage. Marina Shafir pulls Moxley to safety. So he's safe now. He's away from the tables. Darby's on top of the cage. Gabe Kidd meets him up there, hits him with a low blow. So now Gabe Kidd is on top of the cage and he applies a sleeper hold. And Darby reaches up behind him and he rakes the eyes, gouging the eyes. And then both men fall off the cage and they crash and burn through all of the stacked tables down below. And it was a hell of a bump for Darby to take, but it was really Gabe Kidd who was on the bottom. And he took the brunt of it, and Darby fell right on top of him. So thankfully he was okay, but like that looks scary because, again, all of his weight, not that Darby is a giant man, but all of his weight just came crashing down right on top of Gabe Kidd. So, yeah, it was a big spot. Not the spot of the night or anything. Thank Michael Oku for that on the pre-show. But still a hell of a spot. So inside the cage, Ospreay hit a Stormbreaker on Claudio. Omega and Ibushi hit stereo V-triggers on Nick Jackson. Omega hoisted up Matt and Ospreay hit him with a hidden blade from the top rope into a one-winged angel from Kenny Omega. Then they let Tanahashi, they gave him the floor, they let Tanahashi ascend to the top rope. He hit a high fly flow, his last ever in the UK, and he got the pin. Over 30 minutes into this madness, the babyfaces win. As the babyfaces are celebrating inside the cage, Excalibur says that Darby was getting medical attention at ringside. Yeah, no shit. Omega helped Darby to his feet, and Darby looked like he was out of it. I don't know if he was concussed or not, but he was certainly acting like it, so maybe he was just doing a really good job of selling how dizzy he was, but he looked like he was in a car wreck. So they all come into the cage, not into the ring, but into the cage. Ospreay's in the ring. He's kneeling down, and he's shaking hands and hugging and getting his kudos from each of his teammates here, Omega and Tanahashi. And they give him the ring to himself. So the rest of the babyfaces exit the cage. Ospreay's in the ring all by himself. They, you know, no music. Everyone's giving him a standing ovation. Then they play Ospreay's music. And this is his send-off. He made it through alive and in one piece. And we don't know when the next time is that we're going to see Will Ospreay in the ring. But he got the win. He's in his home country in front of his home people. And everybody is cheering for him. And they're chanting for him. And they're applauding him. And it's this great moment for him. He exits the ring. He's not out of the cage yet, but he exits the ring. He's on the floor. He's about to leave the cage. When he turns around, though, Claudio, because the heels were still inside, they were on the floor. Claudio blasts him with a European uppercut, and then he locks the cage door while Moxley puts the boots to Ospreay. And with the door locked, we are supposed to believe here that the babyfaces outside the cage are unable to do anything about this. They're trying to get in through the door. The door is locked. Oh my God, what are we going to do? This man is being brutalized here inside this cage with a bad neck. And there's just nothing we can do. Now, Tanahashi, I can understand because he's got the jelly knees. So Tanahashi shouldn't be climbing anything. He shouldn't be climbing into bed. But you got Kenny Omega, you get Darby Allin, you got Kota Ibushi. nobody thinks to climb in over the cage. Now you have Wheeler Yuta, who's right by the door inside the cage, and he's got a kendo stick. So he can poke them and prod them and use that as a weapon to try to prevent them. But nobody is even attempting to climb into the cage. And nobody is thinking, maybe I should go around to the other side. Maybe I'll beat them to the punch and I could try to climb in that way. It's like a few weeks ago, we were going into SummerSlam, right? And on the WWE Vault channel, they uploaded the cage match from SummerSlam in 94 between Bret Hart and Owen Hart. And when the match was over, it was pure pandemonium. It was absolute chaos because you had all of the Hart family members at ringside. And Jim Neidhart was in, he got, you know, out of his seat and jumped the barricade, and he clotheslined the bulldog over the barricade, and his wife went tumbling over with him, and all the brothers. So they get Brett back in the cage, and they're beating on Brett. And so what are the brothers doing? The brothers are trying to climb into the cage, and this was a taller cage. And they're climbing, and they're climbing, and, you know, Owen would, he took his shoe off, and he's going over there every now and then to bat them down. But they're trying to climb over into the cage, and eventually they make their way in. I'm like, you know what? This looks like, this was mass chaos, and it looked like, okay, this is what you would do in this situation. You're desperate to help out your family member here who's being just destroyed. The door is padlocked shut. Let me try to climb into the cage. It would be the equivalent of the bulldog and all the brothers just standing there going, gee, I don't know what to do. What should we do here? I mean, Davey, is there a Home Depot maybe nearby? Maybe you can go buy some bolt cutters? I don't know. I don't know. I guess we can't do anything. It would be ridiculous. So I'm watching this, and it's, you know, the dumb baby face syndrome, of course. And nobody is doing anything. So finally, the ops, they run out. Samoa Joe, Powerhouse Hobbs, Katsuyori Shibata, they run out. I should mention to you, by the way, that Marina Shafir, who had been outside the cage, on the opposite side to where the baby faces were acting like there was nothing they could do, Marina Shafir climbed over into the cage. Again, nobody thought to even attempt this. It's not like they were even trying and they're like at the top and then they get like knocked down or anything. Like, no, they're just like, shit, what do we do? So the ops, they run out, and actually, before the ops even comes out, I'm skipping the best part here. Before the ops even comes out, because Ospreay's being stomped on and DDT after DDT, and Moxley gives him a death rider. Again, all this shit right on his injured neck in the middle of the ring here. And they're doing this to try to get heat. It's Ospreay in the UK. He just got this big win, and now you're killing this dude. And it was designed to get heat, and it didn't work. This crowd didn't give a shit. Or whatever heat it might have gotten, there were some boos here and there. It was very limited. Like, they did not get the heat that I'm sure they were expecting to get. And part of the issue is, frankly, everybody knew that Ospreay had a bad neck and he was leaving. They knew that Ospreay was leaving. He announced to us already on television that he was leaving, that he was going to have to go under the knife. We knew this coming in. This was not like a big shock angle. Oh my God, what are they doing to Will Ospreay here? And that might have been part of the issue here. But whether it was apathy or boredom or whatever it is, the crowd was not reacting, I think, in the way that you would expect them to react in this situation. And Excalibur's on commentary saying, oh my God, they wrapped the chair around his neck. They just stomped on the chair. This could be the end of his career. But that's what they did to him in Texas. It wasn't the end of his career then, although I guess they're crediting his injury to the Death Riders and what they did to him, but he was back on TV 2 weeks later. So whatever, they did the same thing to him again here. He laid there dead with the chair around his neck. Then the ops comes out. And if I have to listen to one more sicko on Twitter after I posted this, because I posted about how dumb the baby faces were made to look here at the end, and if I have to listen to one more sicko, tell me, Wheeler Yuta was there with a kendo stick. There was nothing they could do. I know this is like your gotcha moment to AEW, but clearly you weren't paying attention. And Wheeler Yuta was there with a kendo stick, and so they couldn't get into the cage. They were trying, but they couldn't get into the... And I'm like, do these people honestly expect me to sit here and you're going to tell me that Powerhouse Hobbs was unable to get into the cage because Wheeler Yuta stopped him from doing so. That Wheeler Yuta stopped him from doing so. Do you know what Powerhouse Hobbs could do to Wheeler Yuta with that kendo? Do you know how far up his ass he could jab that kendo stick if he wanted to? And you're actually going to defend this shit? Because they'll defend it to the death, of course. I mean, I know this already, and this goes for both sides, but it's worse with AEW. Like, they're really hardcore defenders where they could do no wrong, and right, everything they do is great, everything's great. Officer Bar Brady, nothing to see here. And I get it, you know, they will defend it until their death. They will defend it until their dying breath. I mean, it's like fucking Citizen Kane, right? The last fucking words out of his mouth, Rosebud, right? And the AEW sickos, it would be Yuta. To their dying breath. I understand that, but like, please, if you are going to continue to make this point and argue this to me, I will personally pick up the phone and I will personally call the psych ward. I will make the call, okay? You just let me know. Let me know where to send them. There was no defense of this. It's stupid. It was very, very dumb. It was not well thought out. Or at least an execution, maybe. It didn't come off the way that it was supposed to. It was dumb. It's okay to admit that it was dumb. It's okay. I promise you, they will not kick you out. They will not kick you out of the family. They will not kick you out of the cult. Okay? You'll be okay. You'll be fine. But now the ops are at ringside. Finally, someone says we should get the cage raised. And they did lift the cage. The Death Riders were able to make their escape. They escaped through the crowd. Trainers and babyfaces, they all made their way into the ring to check on Ospreay, who was laying there dead. And that was the end of this 4.5-hour odyssey here that was Forbidden Door, London. Now, I understand that they killed him off because he was going away anyway, but again, I just thought, you know, the Death Rider stuff, killing him at the end, it really wasn't necessary. I know why they did it. I know what they were going for. They wanted to put heat on the Death Riders. But I feel like if you were to have the heels just have the heels win. And then you could still give Ospreay that moment at the end where he's like half dead, but he gets up and everybody gives him a nice ovation. But he's all like, man, I let you guys down, and it's all beat up and injured. And then he gets that exit, you know, with dignity. And that's the last we see of him for a while. But have the heels go over. That would have been effective, too. But still give Ospreay that moment at the end. Instead, they repeated the same angle they already did with him in Texas, which ended up not really meaning a whole hell of a lot, but they repeated the same angle and they, you know, ended up making everybody look like an idiot, but they wanted to go for the heat here at the end. The match here's the thing about this match. When they announced this as a lights out, unsanctioned match, just like Anarchy in the Arena, Blood and Guts, and those types of matches, you know what to expect coming in. Like, you can never really be shocked by what they give you here. When they do the gore and the blood and the violence, the ultra violence and the disgusting shit that they do, it's part and parcel of what Tony Khan loves, you know, and just what they do and what Moxley loves, and you know what to expect. So I knew that coming in here, the blood and the gore and the plunder. I wasn't a huge fan of this match. This match was, it really wasn't for me. I'm sure for some people, they'll think it's the best thing in the world. For me, Hangman MJF had the best match in the entire show. I enjoyed that more. Because to me, we had Anarchy in the Arena a few months ago, a Double or Nothing. This was Anarchy in the Arena, but in a cage. There's a sameness to this. And Anarchy in the Arena, I had a lot of fun with this year, especially the whole let the bodies hit the floor part with, you know, Drowning Pool. That was a really fun match. But that's what this was. But it was contained within, for the most part, it was contained within a cage. And we just had that a few months ago. I mean, at least they were smart enough to not do Blood and Guts. That would have been complete overkill. Like, if they had gone from Anarchy in the Arena to Blood and Guts, like a month and a half later, they may still do it before the year is over. But they didn't do Blood and Guts. But I just feel like I've seen this before. This time they tossed in a few names, you know, who we normally don't see, Tanahashi and Gabe Kidd, Kenny Omega and Kota Ibushi, we haven't seen in a month, so they threw them in there. I did think it was a nice gesture, you know, giving Tanahashi the pin at the end, you know, if the babyfaces were going to win. So I like that. I mean, I thought that was, That was nice. But the story here is Darby and Jon Moxley. That's what the match was supposed to be, really. But they probably want to hold off on it until September at All Out, so they gave us this in the meantime. The story coming in here, though, was more about Will Ospreay and his injury. That's really what the story was. Is Ospreay going to be able to make it through the match in one piece? Because he was medically cleared, and you know, he's been doing a lot of interviews this week talking about how my doctors told me that, you know, it shouldn't get any worse, and they're comfortable with me, and I'm comfortable going in there and protecting myself enough. But, you know, he was also talking like, if this is the last time I get to be the real Will Ospreay, then I'm going to go out there and give it my all. And he didn't do anything in the match that was too crazy. They left that to Darby, who is always going to do crazy shit no matter what. Ospreay leaving is going to leave a hole in the roster. There's nothing that could be done. I don't know if he's having a fusion. I don't know if he's having like a cleaning and they're just going to fix up a few things and he'll be back in 5 months. If it's a fusion, he's gone for a year. There's a big difference there. We're talking about, you know, Ospreay out for 4 or 5 months or Ospreay out for 10 to 12. Big difference. And we don't know. He hasn't commented on exactly what the surgery and what the procedure is going to be. It's going to be tough, especially if Swerve has to be out for a while. People are going to have opportunities to step up and take their place because those are two big baby faces to lose, even if it's only for a few months. The matches were solid on this show, solid to very good in some cases. I thought the AEW World title match for the most part was excellent. Again, we get solid to very good matches. I mean, they shit them out every week on AEW television. When the show was over, I was like, you know what? This was a good show. This was not a great show. This was not one of my favorite shows, but it was good. It was good. You know, I didn't feel like I was cheated out of my money. They always give you an overload of matches. They should, you know, I mean, I've said my piece on that, but they want to try to get everybody on the show. That's fine. They stuck most people on the pre-show at the very last minute, 4 matches. Every match was like an all-star 6-person, 8-person tag match, whatever. There's so many matches, there's so many championships, it could be dizzying sometimes. But I felt like there was enough on this show that I did like, you know, that I got my money's worth. In terms of in-ring, it was a good show. In terms of the stories and the angles, nothing really to get excited about here. Honestly. Happy to see Wardlow back. Happy to see Jamie Hayter back. She'll obviously be working with Tekla. But in terms of the angles and the stories, this was... It was pretty weak. And again, Forbidden Door is a novelty that has worn out its welcome with me. I know some people would disagree. A lot of people agree that it was a cool concept 3 years ago and even 2 years ago. But at this point, the Forbidden Door, it's very played out. We get the Forbidden Door every single week. So it doesn't mean what it used to mean. And this year was the 1 year more than any other that they've been doing this show where it was an AEW show more than anything. It didn't feel like a Forbidden Door show. Most of the matches were AEW talents and they dropped people in here and there, Hiromu here, Tanahashi there. But for the most part, it was just an AEW show, you know, masquerading as a Forbidden Door show. So is Tony Khan going to continue the concept? Yes. They did 19,000 people here at the O2. I don't know what the gate was. It's probably in the top 5 that they've ever done. It's a very successful show. Next year, they should be back to the normal schedule. With this show in June and all in August. So they may have greater access to talent from New Japan at that point. Who even knows what the New Japan roster is going to look like at that point? New Japan is going through a period of great upheaval right now. They're trying to make new stars. They've lost a lot of stars. I think that's part of the problem. New Japan as a product is very cold. When they did the Forbidden Door 3 years ago, New Japan was, I don't want to say it was super hot because it really hasn't been super hot since COVID. COVID really did a number on this fucking company, but they were hotter than they were now. They had bigger names than they do now. Every year that goes by that New Japan gets that much weaker, it makes this show feel weaker. That's absolutely part of it. New Japan is ice cold right now. Takeshita just won the G1. Takeshita's an AEW guy. And he wasn't even on the show. In a match. I mean, he came out briefly, but he wasn't even in a match on the show. And so that's part of the problem, too. Take a look at the Twitter poll. How would you grade Forbidden Door 2025? With almost 1,800 votes in so far. Look at the split here. A, B, C, and D. 25% roughly have given this show an A grade. 27% have given this show a B grade. 23.6% have given this show a C grade. And 24.6% have given this show a D grade. It's almost an even split right down the line. Where do I fall on this? I'm in the B category. I think solid B. That's probably what I would go for this show. Tony signed everyone away from Japan. Well, I mean, he did, but they were going to leave anyway. It's not just that Tony, like, snuck in at night and just stole everybody, stuffed them in a bag and ran off. Like, they were leaving New Japan. They wanted to make more money. And if Tony didn't take them, I guarantee you WWE would have. WWE would have taken Okada. They would have taken Jay White. They would have taken Will Ospreay. But yes, Tony signing away so many names from them. He has them now, they don't, and they just haven't built up enough new stars to make up that deficit, you know? I mean, that's what happens when you don't act quick enough in terms of building up all of this new talent. Like, they should already have at this point two or three of those guys, the Yota Tsujis and Shota Umino's. Like, they should already be in a position where they are a top talent. So they have like five guys that are like their nucleus that you could build around, and none of them have been elevated to that spot yet. I don't know what they're waiting for. They lost Naito. I mean, you think that David Finlay is going to be there forever? All right, let's go back to the super chats that first came in tonight. Start with the terrible dried chicken getting us started. By the way, the exterminator is still not here. And it is almost 11 o'clock at night. Is he coming at all? Probably not. I'm going to subdue my anger and get through these super chats because I'm very angry right now. Dried chicken says, did you see the viral clip of what Rampage's son did? Yes, I did. Of course, I did. And it was disgusting, and he should be locked away for many years to come. It was disgusting, and he has no business being out on the streets after what we saw in that video. The update, by the way, on the man that he almost beat to death, Psycho Stew. Last update I saw right before I went live tonight. He is alert and was communicating, you know, talking to people earlier, but he almost choked to death on his own blood and his teeth. He had his, I don't say all of his teeth knocked out, but he got a lot of teeth knocked out, and he almost choked to death on his blood and his teeth. But he's alive. But that's the only update we have so far. Absolutely disgusting. Death Scythe says, while watching the three-way AEW tag team title match, it made me think if only Vince made the main event of Survivor Series 97 a triple threat with Bret, Shawn, and The Undertaker, and the whole Montreal screwjob could have been avoided. Well, I've said that on the podcast for years. Undertaker was in the building that night. He was there. He had no match, but he was there. That would have been the simple solution. Because he had been working with both of those guys. He had worked with Bret at SummerSlam and at that UK pay-per-view. And then he went right from a program with Bret to a program with Shawn. He was right in the thick of it. It would have actually made storyline sense for him to be a part of that match. And I don't believe the idea was ever even broached. Like, in all the stories that have been retold about Montreal and the ideas that people were trying to come up with, Vince and Cornette and all these people, nobody thought, like, maybe we just put The Undertaker in the match. Nobody thought of that? Let Shawn beat Undertaker so Bret doesn't have to take the losing fall. Maybe Bret would have said no, but apparently the idea was never even pitched. I never really understood that. Havili says, what's up, Sala Monster? Shout out from Brisbane, Australia. Let's just say that Hulk Hogan's return to WWE in 1998. What is the possibility of getting Austin versus Hogan at WrestleMania 15 instead of Rock versus Austin? If Hogan had come back to the company, I think the likelihood is very high. And I think that, I mean, that would have been terrible for The Rock and Austin. Hogan coming into the company in 98 when they were building their new stars up would have been the worst possible thing. The worst possible thing. It's a good thing it didn't happen in hindsight. And he says today would have been his mom's 63rd birthday. Well, I wish your mother a very heavenly birthday, Havili. I'm sure she was a lovely lady. Fox says excited for the upcoming video. I assume he meant stream, so I hope it lived up to your expectations. Dry Chicken says AEW in 2025. This Dry Chicken here is enjoying the women's division so much. Lower card, mid card, or top spot, the personalities are great. Gabriel Boss says everyone can make fun of Nine Belts Monet, but you can't take away from the workload that she is putting in. She wrestled 4 times in 5 days this week. Yeah, you know, she did. And if I'm Tony Khan, man, like, she's in a feature match on your pay-per-view and you're allowing her to wrestle 4 times in 5 days. Like, that's taking a risk there. I don't even know if I would allow that. I mean, one match is one thing. 2 matches is one thing. But fucking 4 matches. I mean, you're really tempting fate. Especially with all the injuries they've had. Brian Cage had a knee replacement. He's been out because he got hurt. And that's not the reason why he had the knee replacement. I think he tore his ACL, but he just decided, you know what, I'm going to get my knee taken care of. But he got hurt at an indie show back in March. We haven't seen him since. Oh, the moldy cheeseburger. Can Tony Khan replace Excalibur with Walker Stewart on commentary going forward? Walker Stewart is quite good. He is very good. Fabian Garcia. The show was fun, and I can say overall I was entertained. What more can I ask for? Some booking I don't agree with, but when do we ever? That was from Fabian. Mr. E. 1976, here's to the tip jar. Thanks for everything you do, Sala Monster. Stay pressing forward. Thank you, Mystery. I try. The Real CS says, hey, Solo, I have a question for you. Since you are a commentator for HOG, do you prefer to not know the results of the matches? To me, your reactions come off as genuine, so I was wondering. I would prefer not to. I would prefer not to. Sometimes I don't. Sometimes I do. If it comes off like I don't, it's possible I don't. And it's also possible I'm doing a very good job of fooling you into believing that I don't. If it were up to me, I wouldn't. But there are many times where I need to know what's going on. Especially if I'm going to be involved in something on the show, which does happen a lot. Joseph Stewart says, I want to take time out today and remember Wyndham Rotunda, a.k.a. Bray Wyatt. Absolutely. I mentioned that before. 2 years. He has been gone. Also, do you think Bo Dallas's Uncle Howdy could work in AEW? And would the AEW fans accept Bo Dallas as Uncle Howdy? No. Uncle Howdy would not work in AEW. Uncle Howdy barely works in WWE. It would not work in AEW. I'm hearing good reviews also of Raven's autobiography. Is autobiography or is documentary? I thought it was a movie that was coming out. I think it's a movie, not a book. Buy or sell Prince Batman 89 soundtrack or Batman Forever soundtrack? Prince Batman 89. Do you remember the Batman and Robin soundtrack? I don't. Do you think that we will get Dominic Mysterio against John Cena at Survivor Series? I don't. After rewatching and seeing teases on SmackDown, could the Wyatt Six have every title on SmackDown in the future? I fucking hope not. No. Absolutely not. Power Spying Games. Power Spying Games says he was there. He was at Forbidden Door tonight, if I can find it here. There he is. I enjoyed Hangman versus MJF the most. You and me both, man. That was my favorite match of the night. Best match on the show. Havili says, if Yokozuna left WWE, would he have left WWE? Would he have another run of the WWE? Would he have another run of the WWE Championship or become Intercontinental or European Champion? I'm not sure I understand the question. I think he means if he did not leave WWE. He didn't leave WWE. I mean, they got rid of him. His contract expired. He wasn't cleared by certain athletic commissions to wrestle. He was so morbidly obese. It was a danger to him and potentially others to allow him into the ring. So that's why his career came to an end. Would he have had another run with the WWF title? I don't think so. With Sami Zayn on SmackDown, most likely to have War Games MFT versus the OG Bloodline. Thank you for everything. I really hope that's not what we get. That would be so fucking lame. How many times are we going to see the fucking Bloodline in War Games? My God. My God. Can we not, please? Can we just not? Deathscythe on SmackDown when Nick Aldis said to Cena, I just got word from Brock Lesnar and I completely forgot that match is still happening and I would rather they coaxed Steve Austin out of retirement to face Cena instead of Brock. I'd rather they not do either one of those matches, actually. Okay, I'm back. Sorry for the delay. We are back. We are back. The Exterminator is here. I just had him walk me through what he's going to do. He's got to get his suit on. Apparently it's that bad. He's got to get his B suit on or whatever it is. And he explained the whole process. And so we're trying to get this fixed. So let's try to wrap this up so I can go see what he's doing here before he finishes. But it looks like it's going to take a while. But what a mess though, man. Basically, we got to get to the queen. Once we get to the queen, then we're in business, and then we can kill the rest. What a mess! Yeah, you know it's a serious situation when the Exterminator is here at 11 o'clock on a Sunday night. And he's getting his B suit, so it's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. All right, let me pick up where we left off here. Yes, we now return to our regularly scheduled programming here. Charlotte. Yeah, Charlotte. Charlotte is in my wall downstairs. We are going to kill the queen. Jeremy Rose, AEW got to have the worst book refs in wrestling, he says. Food Hive. Solomonster is going to rip up another bill live on stream again. Just like he did on that one stream during the pandemic. Classic moment. I remembered that. That was when I said no mas to cable and I cut the cord and I haven't gone back since. That was 5 years ago. Defined real spot of the night for me was all the baby faces telling Tanahashi to get off the ladder. Jeremy Rose says MJF Hangman ending was absolute BS. Ref counts three, then wakes up minute or two later to see MJF about to remove the foot. It was very dumb. As I said, it was very, very dumb. Jeremy says later, his spidey senses caught MJF about to use the ring, but then didn't notice or hear contract used. And yeah, when he hit him with that contract case, dude, it made such a loud sound. But apparently, Bryce Remsburg, his hearing is not that great. Apparently not. Bobby's World, thank you for the gifted membership, brother. I appreciate it very, very much. Jeremy says, buy or sell. Tony Khan needs to just run the business and stop being Booker. It doesn't matter, dude. It doesn't matter. This is his company. This is his baby. He's the Booker. He's not handing that off to somebody else. So it's a pointless question. Shadow C. That Bozilla can give me a hip attack to the face all day, every day. You know, I will say, though, like, there are a lot of people who are going to take notice of Bozilla now who didn't even know who the woman was before. And I meant what I said when I said that if you're Stardom, make sure she's locked into a contract. And this is not a Stephanie Vaquer situation. Because I think the WWE and AEW were definitely paying attention tonight. That is for sure. Larcity. Am I the only one who thinks Kenny Omega did the belt collector gimmick better than Mercedes Mundane? How would you rank the following names on their run in 2002? The Rock, Brock Lesnar, Shawn Michaels, and Kurt Angle. I mean, they all had a hell of a year in 2002. But I mean, how can I go with anybody but Brock Lesnar? I mean, that was the year that made him. He debuted, he won King of the Ring, he beat Hulk Hogan with a bear hug, he beat The Rock. He won the WWE Championship. He beat The Undertaker in Hell in a Cell. The only rookie year I could think of that rivals that and is better than that is Kurt Angle. Kurt and Brock. Two of those guys right there. I mean, those are your two best rookie years right there. Easily. So I would go Brock first. All right, I'm not using this anymore. Fuck this. I'm going to look at the list here. This list is getting on my fucking nerves. Sorry, I'm going to look at it over here. Oh my God, just what I needed. That's what all the Yellow Jackets are going to be singing as they're fleeing and flying out of the wall outside. They'll be shouting Bree Mode as they fly away. So Larcity, I would go Brock. God, 2002, huh? Brock, Kurt, Rock, and then Shawn Michaels. Just because Shawn didn't return to the ring until August, and then he didn't wrestle again until the Elimination Chamber. I mean, that's not really a complete year, so I can't rank him above those other names. GMB, Oba and Javon was incredible. Was the best one-on-one match today. Oz and Glorious, wasn't the Hurt Syndicate the catalyst for Ricochet spiraling to begin with after they humiliated him? That was before the Swerve TP spot. Long term, yeah. Sure. I'm sure that's the reason that they suddenly ran out there. You could argue that. I mean, that's going back a ways. He was playing the long game. Is that what he was doing? They were playing the long game. Base Beers, can't wait for Wardlow to do a tell-all shoot. Death Scythe, what did the young doctor say when his mother asked him what he wanted for his birthday? Patience. Patience. P-A-T-I-E-N-C-E. Get it? Also, do you think Rampage Jackson's son should be charged with first degree? I think he should be locked away behind bars for at least 20 years. Yes. What you saw in that video was attempted murder. Plain and simple. He should be locked away. He should be off the streets and locked away. There's no excuse for that. I don't give a shit who ginned him up. He was looking at the chat. The chat, you know, he took the rage bait from the chat. Everyone's making excuses. I don't give a shit. It should be locked away. IP, that's the name, by the way. I'm not describing what I'm doing right now. Saw Weapons on Friday. Thanks for recommending it. Well, you're very welcome. I hope you enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun watching Weapons. I still think Sinners is the best movie I've seen this year, but Weapons was very fun. Oz and Glorious. Grateful for the community and the work you put in, Solid Monster. Also, thank you for not taking the bait and becoming a performative, hyperbolic, AW is dying grifter like everyone else in the space. I've never once said that AEW is dying. I mean, they have 600 million. There's 600 million reasons why they are not dying, despite what other people may say, which I think is a ridiculous thing to say. 19,000 people in the O2 in London. I think they probably did $2.5 million, $3 million at the gate. Doesn't seem like a dying company to me. You're very welcome. Base Bear says, when are we getting the call-in segment on the show? There's no consistency to it. It's just when I feel like doing it, or I may set a super chat goal for it. Nothing is scheduled, but we'll do more calls. It's just a matter of fitting them in, especially when I know there's going to be like a long stream. I wouldn't do it on a stream like that. If it was maybe a night where I felt like, this show is basic show, whatever, maybe. We'll see. Havili says, I meant if Yokozuna did not leave WWE and lost weight. How long before Zilla joins WWE? Zilla, he's still a little ways away, but I have every reason to believe that Zilla will end up in WWE. It's not like an imminent thing, though. Double S in the chat says, be the booker, and he puts a fucking B. I mean, look, there are people who think yellow jackets are bees. They're not. They're wasps. But they look like bees. Hey, at least it could be worse, right? I could have those murder hornets. That was a thing here in New York a couple of years ago. Thoughts on WWE doing a battle royal with the winner against Stephanie Vaquer for the women's championship? No. You do Io Sky. They may do that, but Io Sky against Stephanie at Clash in Paris. That's it. Or maybe you do Io, Roxanne, and Stephanie at Clash in Paris. But that's it. That's all you need to do. Base Beer is, what are you exterminating? Queen rat? You know what? It kind of feels that way, doesn't it? Fucking rat queen is buried deep within the wall somewhere. I don't know, but whatever it is it's being taken care of as we speak.
I am the rat.
Shut the fuck up. Boy, there are trees sprouting everywhere tonight.
Fuck that tree.
There are trees sprouting everywhere. Jericho is back in the news, and the trees are sprouting again. Deathsipe, you know what we Brits always say, God save the Queen. You do. You do say that. You say God save the Queen, I say God slay the Queen. Base Beerus, shout out to the exterminator. Yes. Shout out to him. I just had a very nice conversation with him. Alex, can you see a scenario where Cena decides to extend his retirement? No. Where he decides to extend his retirement until next year's WrestleMania, only because he wouldn't want his final Mania match to be infamously remembered as one of the worst Mania matches of all time. I don't think he cares. I don't think that matters to him, what other people are going to say about his WrestleMania match. I don't think he's living on social media worried that people are saying that it was a shitty main event at WrestleMania, which it was. He is not extending his retirement. He is committed through the end of the year. Saturday night's main event, December 13th, is going to be his final match. And that's it. He's done. And you will never see him in the jorts and hat and t-shirt again. Just like Undertaker has said, like, you're not going to see him dressed as The Undertaker, right? He comes out now, he's the American Badass. He's Mark Calloway. He says, unless I get back in the ring, which I'm not doing, I'm not wearing The Undertaker stuff again. That's it. I believe Cena when he says that. Face Bearist with the $12 learning tree. This has been an unbelievable review. Boy, you guys are really having some fun at my expense, aren't you? Again, it's not a B, though. Like, the joke doesn't work. Bass Bearist says, what would get a bigger pop if Jericho returned? Or what would get a bigger pop if Jericho returned? His Break the Walls Down theme or him simply saying, hi, guys, before he appears? Not that. Y2J versus Brock would be great. They have history already. Yeah, great is not a word I would use for that. I don't think that would be as great as you believe it would be. I have no interest in seeing that. Jane Love, it looked like Yuta was stabbing the face's fingers as they tried to climb. You can see Yuta doing that to Hobbs, which swayed the faces not to climb. Well, but gee golly, I mean, if Wheeler Yuta is jabbing them in the fingers, then I guess Will Ospreay, he's just going to have his neck broken. There's just nothing we can do. I mean, do people not realize how ridiculous this sounds? Like, yes, I saw him doing that with some people, but not, first of all, not all of them, number one. Number two, that is not reason enough to leave your comrade to die in the ring because Wheeler Yuta has a stick in his hand. Wheeler Yuta. Now, if he had a blowtorch or something, I'd be like, okay, you know what, Will, you're on your own. You're on your own. That I can understand. Chainsaw. You know, if Wheeler Yuta was standing there outside the ring, you know? Yeah, if I'm Hobbs, I'm like, all right, you know what? It's all good, man. It's all good. I'm going to back away. That I can understand. Base Beer says, I botched that. I meant, thanks, guys. Look at that. You botched your own super chat. It's terrible. Yeah, my new least favorite tag team, the Killer Bees. Watch. We'll land on the Killer Bees and Be the Booker. Can you imagine if we land on the fucking Killer Bees and Be the Booker tonight? Luis with the 12. I wasn't able to watch All In. I still can't believe WWE gave us two different versions of Logan Paul knocking out John Cena. Now we know who is going to win at Clash in Paris. Fuck Logan Paul. Thank you, Luis. Shadow C. Are you going to watch The Long Walk and Aliens Earth? What is the Long Walk? And number two, I would like to watch Alien Earth. I do feel like I should go back and just rewatch the first movie, though. It's been a while since I've seen it. Deathside, also, I don't disagree. I think they should throw the book at Raja. Is it Raja or Raja? I think Raja. At least Travis Scott didn't hurt Cody like that great. Now this son of a bitch has me defending Travis Scott. I mean, yeah, I mean, the two situations are not even remotely similar. Like, this guy just snapped. Like, I don't give a shit who said what to him beforehand. Like, he's a grown adult. He's not a child. When he slammed this man to the mat and the way that his head smacked the mat, like, he was already out of it. And then he started throwing punches at this guy full fucking force. And he threw so many of them. Like, there's no, and it's all on video. And there's no argument to be made that, oh, well, I didn't know. I mean, they told me I could give him a receipt. So I just decided to punch him 17 times in the fucking face as hard as I possibly could. Like, no, throw the book at him and lock him up. That's it. And throw away the key. It was disgusting. And there's absolutely no excuse for it. Dr. Scorpio, it's a wasp. I can't believe that. I can't believe that. Leopoldo, I'm so tempted to take Solo's gaming chair right now. Well, too bad. I'm already back in the chair. I wasn't out of the chair for that long. Just had to go see what was going on. Speedy, Cena says that now, but even the Brothers of Destruction, Triple H and HBK, could not resist the greatest force in wrestling history, Saudi money. Well, one thing that John Cena does not need to worry about is that sweet Saudi money. He's got plenty of it from his career in Hollywood, so I think he'll be okay. And with that, we got one round. We didn't quite hit the secondary goal, but we did hit the main goal. So we will be doing some Be the Booker here. More of the Super Chat. You get your fingers jabbed, you're going to lose grip. Again, I could be mistaken here. Did you see Kenny Omega try to climb the cage? Did you see Kota Ibushi try to climb the cage? Did you see Darby Allin try to climb the cage? Maybe one of them. I don't remember seeing any of them even attempt to climb the cage. But I get it. You know, people are going to make excuses. There's no excuses for this. Like, you can try. It's admirable. Like, you could try. But it was stupid. Like, again, just, it's okay to admit it was very, very stupid. It, like, visually, it didn't work. It made the baby faces look very weak and ineffective. Shadow C, The Long Walk is a horror movie based off of an SK book. Oh, Stephen King. Okay. First I'm hearing of this, so I will have to look into what the movie is about. First I'm hearing of it. Let's be the booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to be the booker.
You know, Bash may have had the comment of the night in the chat just now. I think Bash has the comment of the night. Darby could climb a mountain, but not a cage. Bash, you win the prize for the night. Darby could climb a mountain, but not a cage. Sad. All right, tag team, be the... I swear, if we land on these guys... I swear. All right, we got the Lucha Bros. We got Penta. We got Rey Fénix. It's a good start. That's a good start. And they are going to be taking on, look at this, LAX. We got Santana and Ortiz. Yes. No killer bees for you. Or killer wasps. Because they're not bees. But they look like them. Women's Be the Booker. We have Rosa. No, no, no. That point. Goodbye, Rosa. Goodbye, Rosa Mendez. Adios. All right, our main event here. Men's Be the Booker. We got a main event to book. Yes, indeed, we do. We have got Men's Be the Booker. Let's do it. Let's do it. We got the WWE Champion. Look at this. We got the American Nightmare. Cody Rhodes. Properly in the main event here of Be the Booker. Cody Rhodes. Ugh. Against Zombie Eddie Kingston. Now that's a badass look right there. This right here is a man that has seen shit. He has seen some shit, let me tell you. We should be getting Eddie Kingston back very soon. He should be back, honestly, any month now. Cody Rhodes and Eddie Kingston in the main event. There's a main event for you. Imagine those promos, man. Eddie cutting promos on corporate Cody. That'd be great. Dr. Scorpio says, hide those belts from Mercedes. Oh, shit. That's right. Yeah, I gotta cover these up here. Yeah, man. I don't know, man. I gotta take them off the wall. She may be coming after my belts. She's gonna have to fight me for them. It's gonna take more than 6 Meteoras to beat me for those belts. She's gonna have to come up with another move. Devin from NJ, who would Solo rather have be seen as final opponent, The Rock or Austin Theory? None of the above. None of the above. Dry Chicken says Don Callis is giving Paul Heyman a run for his money when it comes to recruiting people to his faction. Oh, I would say Paul Heyman has some catching up to do. He's got some catching up to do. Oz and Glorious, how long before WWE signs Rajah Jackson? I'll tell you what, there is, I saw this on PW Insider. The promotion where this happened is Knox Pro. That is Rikishi's promotion. And they are a WWE ID designated affiliate. They have been WWE ID designated since October. And there is definitely talk going on about potentially that changing very soon. They may have potentially lost their ID designation because of this. We'll see. Maybe they should. Power Spying Games, Dumb Babyface Syndrome was strong tonight. Oh, yes, it was. It rears its ugly head every now and then. And Dry Chicken says, Lloyd Christmas has a question for you, Solo. What are the chances of AEW and WWE doing a joint show? Well, I have a sound effect for that. That is where you can send that question, because the chances of that are zero. If I could give you a number less than zero, I would. But zero is as low as you can go. I would imagine Rikishi's promotion is done. No, I wouldn't say it's done. I mean, they've been around 16 years, but as far as a WWE ID affiliate, I wouldn't want to be associated with a company that allows something like that to happen. I could tell you that. Everyone just standing around while this guy is fucking beaten to death almost. Fucking beaten half to death in the middle of the ring. Anyway, thank you guys. This has been a very interesting stream, given everything that's going on here. I have the exterminator in his B suit downstairs somewhere, working on things. His fucking hazmat suit. Working on things, spraying shit. I'm like, should I be worried about this stuff that's being sprayed? Like, no, it's fine. Like, okay, all right. Just checking. Well, hopefully I'll be here for the Raw post-show tomorrow night. If not, then I may have succumbed to whatever is being sprayed here. But I'll have to give you guys an update on my yellow jacket situation. Hopefully they'll begin dying off tomorrow. But I'll be here, hopefully, for the Raw. Okay, the schedule's a little bit different tomorrow. So Raw is airing on Netflix at 3 o'clock Eastern for everybody. So it's an early Raw, don't forget. Early Raw in Birmingham, England tomorrow. I will be live on the channel, barring any exterminator issues. 8 o'clock Eastern, like I was supposed to be tonight. So 8 p.m. Eastern tomorrow, I will go live for the review. But Raw begins at 3. So I guess 3 to 5:30 will be Raw tomorrow. So just be aware of that. Go back and check out episode 926 as well of The Sound Off. If you missed it, a lot of good shit on the podcast. 2 hours worth. Go check it out. Terrible Dried Chicken says, one more, not the bees. You're the bee's knees, Terrible Dried Chicken. Thank you for all the super chats. And everybody else, too. Thank you for all the support tonight. It's been a very stressful night, but you made it a little easier for me to navigate. And I will see you tomorrow for the Raw Post Show. Be well. Be well. Ha ha. Be well. Stay safe. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care, guys.